was shot and was killed tonight. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
Splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is Liz Brown. Good morning. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the morning wake-up call. We have much stuff to talk about. Oh, my goodness. Where do we begin? I was watching the news this morning. Yesterday evening, I was watching the news, and there was a story that was percolating along, and to me, it's a story that kind of reflects the time and the energy of the place that we're in right now in the world. I was thinking about the world, as I tend to do. There's so much going on in it, and there's a story that is percolating all across the world, and at least the world that is not the United States. I don't know that the United States has paid much attention to it. I don't know that the United States media is prepared or even interested in paying much attention to this story, because it doesn't serve the interest of the media to talk about this story or to really take a close look at this particular story. And one of the reasons I feel that way is because of the Oprah story. How did she get to Oprah? How did she get to Oprah? All roads lead back to Oprah. Ooh, I guess if you're worth that much money, a few roads would get back to you. But I was thinking about Oprah taking on the boy on a million, the boy who wrote a million little pieces. I bet he's doing drugs again after what happened to him on Oprah. I bet he's gone back to a million and one pieces. But anyway, I was thinking about Oprah Winfrey was offended by someone lying to her. Lying ain't cool, said Oprah Winfrey. It's you offended me, and you betrayed the listener. I mean, the readers out here that bought your book and expected this would be a truthful story. Okay. And you couldn't turn on a cable news show, a national news show, giving kudos to Oprah for taking on this guy for lying about whether he had, when he had his teeth pulled, he was under, whether he had gotten shot up or not. Now, okay. Did any of you ask yourself the question, well, if it was wrong for this dude to lie about what really happened in his life to the chagrin of readers out there, and it was just a soft issue talk show host who took him on, can anybody explain to me, or has anybody thought, well, why didn't the hard news people take on, oh, I don't know, George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, for the lies that they told us to get us into a war? I'm just asking. The world has flipped. The only place it seems that this media feels comfortable in exposing a lie is about a book. And who gives a flying horse's patoot about this? In the big picture of things, shouldn't we be focusing on the lie that has resulted in people's deaths as a lie, as opposed to a lie that has resulted in a person soaring book sales? It was just fascinating to see how concerned these journalists were with exposing the lie of a junkie. They lie. That's one of the components of being a junkie. You lie. They wanted that junkie, but they didn't want the junkie in the White House. Help me. Putting all that together, working that all through my little head, it comes as no surprise to me that the story is not percolating in the United States about a cartoon printed in a Danish newspaper of the Islamic prophet Muhammad. And the reprinting of these cartoons of the prophet Muhammad. I'm not Muslim. I wouldn't define myself as Muslim. I wouldn't define myself in any organized religious way. But I am very, very, very concerned about this. And I see this as an energy of an attack of a people. I have the super ability because of who I am. A woman of African descent. I see it. I knows it when I sees it. Attacks on people as a result of their gender, or sexual orientation, their ethnicity, their religiousness. I see it. I understand it. And this, the one of the cartoons in particular is just breathtaking. It shows the Prophet Muhammad with instead of a head wrapped turban, he has a ticking bomb on his head. And the Muslim world is outraged by this. And on the other side of this issue, we have this cry for we're allowed to freedom of expression. Well, I'm an American. I am an attorney. I was a criminal defense attorney, so I appreciate the right of freedom of expression. I also understand what provocation is. I also understand when there is people sometimes say, people who want to engage in racism, sometimes they tell racist jokes. And they want you to laugh at the racist jokes and ignore the racism in the light of, I was just being funny. I was just trying to be funny. Wasn't that noose hanging over there funny? Was it freedom of expression? Sure, you should be able to express certain things. But isn't there something else there as well? There's a provocation. There's a stick in it to you. There's a racist energy to this. And you have to examine this cartoon in both aspects. Is this a religious, or is this a secular freedom of expression cartoon? Or is it one of those big, no, one of those corporate suits? Black jelly beans in the bottom of the bag types of comments. Well, I was just joking. The H-E double toothpicks you were. And how do you get to where the energy of this is coming? How do you distinguish whether or not this cartoon, and I'm looking at it now, and I'm also looking at this other cartoon that comes from this right-wing, fax attacker. Anytime there's an issue out there, this right-wing fax place just sends out all of these hysterical, toned faxes about the world is, you know, chicken Republican, the sky is falling. That's the type of entity this place is. And they sent out a fax saying that the Joint Chiefs of Staff are taking the Washington Post to task for a reprehensible and callous editorial cartoon. And what is the editorial cartoon that has got their knickers in a twist? It's and I'm going to describe it to you. It's a cartoon of a hospital bed, and there is a drawing of a man in the hospital bed, and the man has a bandage wrapped around his head. The man has no arms, bandages wrapped around each arm to represent that his arms have been lost. He has no legs, bandages wrapped around to show stubs instead of legs. And he has his little face drawn, and he's not saying anything. And then there is a caricature of a heavy-set man with glasses and a long chin and a rather big nose, and a name tag on this drawing. This appears to be a doctor at his bedside, has a little clipboard in his hand, and at the foot of this soldier's, this appears to be a soldier in this bed with no legs, no arms, in this hospital bed. And at the foot of the bed, there's a, you know how they put the little clips or the little charts at the end of the hospital beds to let the doctors know how the patient is doing. This chart says U.S. Army and numbers of dead, and it has a little line going down indicating that, or line going up, I'm sorry, indicating the number of deaths in Iraq. and the caricature of the doctor at the foot of the bed looking at his chart. The doctor has a name tag on, and the doctor is apparently Dr. Rumsfeld. And the doctor is speaking to the patient, and Dr. Rumsfeld says to the soldier in a hospital bed with no legs, no arms, bandages on his head, "I'm listing your condition as battle-hardened." And then there's a little character at the bottom of it having their own little conversation, and they say, "I'm prescribing that you be stretched thin. We don't define that as torture." The cartoon is a tasteless cartoon about the military, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff have signed off on this cartoon. Now, juxtapose that next to a cartoon. If that is tasteless, if that is intolerable, what would be the, I don't know, Jesus dropping bombs gleefully in Rome? Jesus dropping bombs on the Vatican. You have to understand the energy and the place and the time that things are done in. I look at France has there has been a not only did when this cartoon came out they were so tough. They said, "Oh shoot, I don't care if it offends you," and they reprinted the cartoons again. They reprinted the cartoons again. The Muslim world rose up in opposition and concern and offense and anger and rage about how the Prophet was represented. And what happened? They reprinted him again. Is this an attack on a religious people? I look at, I go to France. I look at the stories in France about Muslim children not being able to wear, women not being able to wear their veils. I look at the attacks on Muslim people in France as a result of the rebellion in Paris and its suburbs. You have to look at things in their entirety. I don't think that there's any question that this is an intolerant, racially, ethnically motivated expression. And there will be consequences as a result of this. And it didn't have to be done. I mean, we're talking about France and Europe that wants to portray a positive, in a positive light, colonialism in their history books. Enslavement was good for you. .454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Ooh, there is so much to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU is my name, my number. I want to give you an opportunity, ladies and gentlemen. Alderman Charles Quincy Troop wants you to come out to the First Ward community meeting at 10 a.m. From 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer. Why? Because you need to provide input on how your community is going to evolve, the form it's going to take, the shape it's going to take. You need to stand up. You need to participate. You need to show up at this redevelopment plan meeting. Your alderman wants you there. Charles Quincy Troop wants you there. weigh in on the development of the First Ward Education, Youth, Community, and Culture Center, major development areas around West Florissant and Union. Show up. Participate. Be there this Saturday at the United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Charles Quincy Troop, the alderman of the First Ward, is putting this together. Be there. We're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with me. We have so much to talk about. We'll be back.
St. Louis, 31 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a little bit of Sours Traffic Weather. Sours Traffic is sponsored by the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and Rivas Barracks. Look for no problems reported. Eastbound 44 from 141 all the way to 270 looks good. Eastbound 40 from 94 to Chesterfield Airport, nothing to report. Eastbound 70 from Mid Rivers Mall all the way into 270, no problems there. Westbound 270 from Canal Bridge all the way to Bell Fountain. Look for no problems to report there as well. Eastbound 40 from Timberlake Manor to Mason is running smoothly. Westbound 40 from 170 to McKnight, everything is going on fine there as well. Northbound 270 between 44 and Marshall, look for a bit of a slowdown. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, there's slow traffic going on there. Westbound 5570 split between Route 3 and the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 from Illinois 111, Kings Highway, all the way into Poplar Street Bridge looks good. And westbound Kingbridge traffic between the Illinois Bank and the Leclerc Landing. Look for slow traffic there. Northbound Route 3 from Monsanto onto the PSB. Those ramps are still clear at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation. In order to rescue a disaster victim, you must first have to find them. Be a part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org, made possible by Search Dog USA. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of rain this afternoon with a high in the lower 50s this evening. Partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Friday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon with a high around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, becoming partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. And on Saturday, colder, partly sunny skies with a high around 40. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 39 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 38 under cloudy conditions. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This winter season, Heat Up St. Louis reminds you that there are many needy people in the bi-state area who face uncertainties with high heating bills. Help Heat Up St. Louis, an all-volunteer charity, by making a tax-deductible contribution. Call the hotline at 314-241-7668 or log on to heatupstlewis.org. A community reminder from WGNU Radio.
Hi, this is James Layton. I'm inviting you to get aboard the Glory Bound train. Every Saturday night, right here over radio station WGNU, traveling down track AM 920. Join us. You'll be glad you did.
The Glory Bound train broadcast with James Wafer is heard every Saturday night at 7:30 right here on WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. This is the station that discusses the issues that matter most to you. And if you have a problem with personal work or family relationships, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in to Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Weekday afternoons from 2 to 4. Then Go do the right thing.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
That's right, that's right. Where else, where else? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, microwaves, DVD players, big screen television sets. How about some treadmills? How about the best tools in the business? You need to go in your own neighborhood, right here in the city of St. Louis. The only Sears in the city of St. Louis. You need to get to Sears at 3425 Union. You don't have to spend $3,500 to get to the mall to shop at the Sears at the mall. No, you don't. Get on over to 3425 Union Sears. They have every single thing that you need, every single thing that the big stores have, plus personal customer service. Can't be beat. Get your shop on. Get on over to 3425 Union Sears, Jerome Williams. And when you go, tell him I told you to.
It's time now for Eye on the Lou. Redistricting. Hand-picked school board members. Up-and-coming elections. Recalls. Battles in Jefferson City. Knockdown dragouts at the Board of Aldermen. Who is who and what is what? That's what you get every Thursday at 7 a.m. when Irene J. Smith joins Liz Brown on the wake-up call for an up-close personal examination of the comings and goings in the St. Louis region. That's Eye on the Lou, Thursday, 7 a.m. with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown. Did you miss the news? Did you forget to pick up her paper? Don't worry about it. Irene and Liz have their eye on it. Besides, those other guys, they didn't get it right anyway. That's Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown every Thursday at 7 a.m. only on the Wake Up Call.
This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Daddy was a soldier. He taught me about freedom, peace, and all the great things that we take advantage of. Once I fed the homeless, I'll never forget the look upon them.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. I'm Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much. Did I say much? Much to talk about. Get to me. You're on the air, Bob.
Liz, how are you feeling this morning?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I am excellent. Liz, I got three quick comments for you. Can you guess what? Channel 2 marched in the police station of the guy that got beat. What was that police station?
Maplewood.
With a guy on crutches who was sitting at Steak and Shake on New Year's Eve. The police came in, asked him to leave. He left. He came back. He said him and his girlfriend got into a fight, so he was up there having coffee. So when they asked him to leave, when he came back, they beat him to a pulp. His legs, they put the camera on his legs, Liz. Both of them are still swollen. They're still swollen. This is another second guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then this happened, well, 32 days into the year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, see,
uh-huh.
Now, and next thing is...
Channel 2's on a roll, huh?
He's on a roll.
Channel 2's on a roll.
This morning, Miss Liz, the state of New Orleans is bubbling mad over him not mentioning Katrina. That's the big news.
He didn't say the word Katrina at all.
Didn't say the word Katrina.
I gotta quote what he said, because what he said was just absolutely absurd.
Right.
Absolutely absurd. I don't have it in front of me. Doggone, I don't have it in front of me.
I'm gonna get
it in front of me, because I understand why the folks are in New Orleans are ticked off.
Right.
Ticked off.
I mean, okay.
Ticked off.
The thing is right here. they already know what's at the corner store. What does that shirt say? That beautiful shirt. Okay, this just enhances it.
You can go to the corner store and get the shirt. It says George Bush doesn't care about black people.
I'm saying, it showed it right there, Liz.
Go to LizBrown.com.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Last thing, Liz, I got to think last night. I said, let me think now. Can a tiger change his stripes? Let me see. Or is this a con game? Liz, tell me what you think about this. Can you believe Judge Alito let the stay of a black man last night?
Everybody's on a little PR thing. You know, did you watch his face?
Yes.
Okay. Did you watch his face at the State of the Union thing? He has such a and I've been trying to figure out the words to use to describe his face. There is so much guilt on that man's face.
I mean,
is so much guilt on that man's face.
He was staring off into space, and he was just.
He looked. He looked so guilty and confused and uncomfortable, and he had a look on his face like, I really shouldn't be here.
See?
I really shouldn't be here.
Because
I lied my behind off to get here. I really shouldn't be here.
You know, and he probably sitting there saying, I wonder if there really is a man up above. Am I going to get it behind this?
Okay. In a word, yes.
Okay. When you're doing the comedy, once you get there, there's a way of guilt hitting you. And he's sitting there saying, I did say I didn't want blacks and women. I mean, it's either, Liz, he was just sitting there staring off into space.
But you know what, Bob? You know what?
Yes.
This too will pass. he'll get back in his game.
Thank you, Liz.
All right, he'll get back in his game. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Don't forget that this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer, the alderman of the First Ward wants you to come out because you need to come out to participate. There is a real rebirth of the community evolving. Redevelopment plans will be announced. Redevelopment plans will be discussed. We're talking about Northland Market to St. Louis Avenue. We're talking about the First Ward Education, Youth, Community, and Culture Center. Major developments on West Florissant. That's this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer. Stand up. Show up. Get up, participate in the future of your community. The alderman of the First Ward, Charles Quincy Troop, is inviting you to a redevelopment meeting this Saturday. That's the day after tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at 3300 North Kings Highway, the United House of Prayer. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me, huh? I guess we put this under, oops. I guess this is, oops. The United States military shot at the Canadian ambassador's car in Baghdad. Oops. Oops. No one was injured. It was an unfortunate incident. Whoops. Oops. Four people were riding in the vehicle. Stuart Henderson, Canada's charge. When the United States, here we go. We've been here before. Here you go. The soldiers fired on it, quote, after it reportedly wouldn't stop. Huh. This sounds like military intelligence, doesn't it? They plugged the car with three rounds. Two went through the hood into the engine block. One went through the lower part of the windshield. Huh. Oops. Oops. How many billions of dollars are we spending over there? And just feel this before we jump to our break here. European English citizens are upset over the death of the 100th UK soldier in Iraq. They're ticked off over the death of 100. I guess Americans are just more thick-skinned, huh? Or just buried deeper. I'm Liz Brown. We're taking a break.
My number is 454-0400. You get to me. We got stuff to take talk about.
Yes, I think I'm going out of my head for you. Oh, you. I wanted you to want me. I need you so badly. I can't think of anything but you. Yeah. And I think
this is your wake up call, Global News Update. Dateline, Washington. The Senate is holding hearings on the impact mergers in the oil industry may have had in driving up the price of gasoline. But officials from six of the largest oil companies have refused to testify. ExxonMobil announced earlier this week it made the largest profit in one quarter of any corporation in history, nearly $11 billion. The Federal Trade Commission has already started an investigation as to whether the oil giants rigged gasoline prices and the levels of oil refining capacities. And Dateline Tehran. Iranian officials last week invited radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr for a visit. Al-Sadr told officials in Tehran that his militia movement, the Mahdi Army, would support the Iranian military if the United States attacked that country. The Mahdi Army has been a problem for the American military in Iraq. It was able to hold off a marine assault for 3 weeks in Najaf in November of 2004. Al-Sadr was quoted as saying that if any Islamic State, especially Iran, is attacked, the Mahdi Army will engage both inside and outside of Iraq. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
Want to do something sweet for your sweetie? Want to show the world that he or she is loved? Want to be on the radio? Why not let everyone know that you love your baby with an on-air I love you message on Valentine's Day? On Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, we'll play your I love you message. And if you're a little shy, that's okay. Liz can do it for you. So if you need to let him or her know you care on Valentine's Day, call 367-2743. That's 367-2743. And say, I love you on Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU. It's been a strange winter. Warm one week and cold the next. All that stress is hard on your roof. Better call Phil Person Roofing at 361-7127 and get it checked ahead of the spring rains. You can get a 15-year warranty on the new modified rubber roof made by GAF, the largest roofing manufacturer in America. Finance that new roof, commercial or residential, with your Visa or MasterCard. Always free estimates. Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127.
It's time now for Eye on the Loo. Redistricting. Hand-picked school board members, up-and-coming elections, recalls, battles in Jefferson City, knock-down drag-outs at the Board of Aldermen. Who is who and what is what? That's what you get every Thursday at 7 a.m. when Irene J. Smith joins Liz Brown on the wake-up call for an up-close personal examination of the comings and goings in the St. Louis region. That's Eye on the Loo, Thursday, 7 a.m., with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown. Did you miss the news? Did you forget to pick up a paper? Don't worry about it. Irene and Liz have their eye on it. Besides, those other guys, they didn't get it right anyway. That's Eye on the Loo with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown every Thursday at 7 a.m., only on the Wake Up Call.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother on the award-winning Makeup Call with Liz Brown.
Let me tell you why I love it. reflection of him, then I must be fly.
I must be fly. I must be fly. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. You need to get up. You need to get to me. Don't forget the website, LizBrown.com. You want to, George Bush doesn't care about black folks t-shirt. Fabulously designed. Fabulous weight. Good looking t-shirt. Get on over to LizBrown.com and check out the t-shirt. Get one. Get one. Get one for your family. Get one for your friends. Get one. Get one. Get one. Get one at LizBrown.com. Go to the corner store and do some, get your shop on. 454-0400 is my phone number. Don't forget that we are archived daily at WhiteRoseSociety.org. That's WhiteRoseSociety.org. You miss an hour, shame on you. But that's all right. You can get it. You can get it. Go to WhiteRoseSociety.org. The show is streamed daily at WGNU.net, streaming 24/7. Also, you can catch it at LizBrown.com. So there's no excuse. It's right there. It is right there. Of course, unless you're at the St. Louis Public Schools, where they have made it their mission to keep out the voice of the wake-up call. That's okay. That's okay. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get to me. And don't forget, on Saturday, that's the day after tomorrow, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., Charles Quincy Troop, the alderman of the First Ward, is inviting you to the United House of Prayer. Why? Because redevelopment is going on in the First Ward. We're talking about the First Ward Education, Youth, and Community and Culture Center. We are talking about the Northland Market to St. Louis Avenue and Four Corners of Kings Highway. Show up. Get involved. Put your input into your own community. First Ward residents, the alderman from the First Ward wants you to come out this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway. Participate. Redevelopment is going on. First Ward on the move. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. We have much to talk about. My number here. You've heard them. You know what the numbers are. Handle your business, huh? That's what you got to do. There was a standoff. There was a Waco thing going on. And where? Brandeis University. Huh? What? A Waco thing going on. Well, what do you mean, Liz? Well, FBI agents tried to seize 30 of the public library computers in Newton, Massachusetts, a few miles from the Brandeis campus. Tried to come in and snatch them. But one little old lady, Kathy Glickwell, said, you know what? No. No. No, you can't have the computers unless they got what? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, raise your hand if you know what she said they had to have before they took her stuff. She said they had to have, come on, say it, a warrant. That's right, boys and girls. She said she went old school on them. She went old school constitution on them. She said, get out my face unless you have a warrant. And you know what the FBI agents did? They scratched their heads and said, but George Bush said we don't need warrants for anything. She said, get out my library. There was a standoff. There was a throwdown. Little old gray-haired woman with their hair tied tightly in a bun with a pencil sticking up out of it and her little bifocals perched on the end of her nose. Went old school. Give me your warrant. Because I'm not moving. FBI agents huddled. You could hear them muttering, but we don't have to get warrants, do we? Do we? They huddled and scratched their heads and cussed and fussed and went to a judge and got a warrant. And the judge said, no, you can't have all 30 of the computers. We'll give you 3. And when you get those 3, because you did not face a clear and present danger,
You can't have them just by demanding them. And when you have them, you only have the right to look at two things on the computers. So, boys and girls, why do we need to make them get warrants? Because they will snatch your stuff and do with it what they were going to take all 30 of the computers. And a little old gray-haired lady with her hair tied in a bun and a pencil sticking up out of the bun said, no, you're not. You have to get a warrant. And I'm going to stand here in my sensible shoes and make sure that you don't get these computers. And they didn't. Tip of the hat. Go old school. Demand a warrant. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call.
Good morning, Miss Brown.
Good morning.
Listen, why don't you talk about where Mrs. King is going to be buried from? Did Mr. Bush not do that for her? Or are you people too ignorant to appreciate something good that's being done for you?
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. That was a Christian. That was a Christian conservative. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get to me. Tyrone, good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Brown. I want to pass on some quick information. You know, a while back you were talking about the cell phone list that you can spend $100 to get the list of people's cell phone.
Well, you spend $100 and you will get a report within hours of all of the phone calls that the owner of that phone call, that cell phone has made, all of their phone records, who they've called, how long they've talked to them, and what their phone numbers are.
Yes, ma'am. I wanted to pass on to you and the listeners that tonight at 10 on Channel 5, they will give some information on how to protect yourself from that.
There isn't much. They're hyping it. There's not much that people can do. There is absolutely not much that people can do. The only thing that you can do is you can call your cell company, like if you go through Nextel or you go through One Singular, you can ask them to, okay, I want, just like what you can do with your gas or your electric, right now you can call on the phone and pay your bills, right? But anybody could call and have your electricity turned off unless you call the electric company and say, okay, if somebody wants access to, if I want access to my account, I have to give you a certain code before you will give me any information about this. So you can call your phone company, your cell phone company, and say, if anybody is asking for my records, I'm going to give you a password. They have got to give that password before you give them any of my records. So that's about the only way that you can protect yourself from that.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would be curious to know what they're talking about, but from what I've done and what I've researched, there's really very little that you can do. There's very, very, outside of legislation preventing them from being able to get this. Because sometimes they get your records surreptitiously. They call the cell phone companies and they ask them for the records. Or people within the cell phone companies give up the records when they don't have the right to do so.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll see. But thank you, Tyrone.
Okay, thank you.
Next hour, brand new segment to the wake-up call, Eye on the Loo. Irene J. Smith is going to be joining me. We're going to be doing Eye on the Loo, and you don't want to miss the end of it when we do Word on the Street, y'all. Word on the Street. You want to know what folks are saying? You need to listen to Word on the Street. Irene J. Smith's going to be joining me in the next hour for a brand new segment of The Wake Up Call, Eye on the Loo. Stay with me.
There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is you and the womb that you blow up the low maybe. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen?
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
the latest from the ABC News. I'm Daria Alvinger.
It's my shadow, I see. 6 more weeks of mild winter weather there will be.
Have spring fever? Too bad. Guess what the nation's most famous groundhog saw this morning?
Punxsutawney Phil has declared there will indeed be 6 more weeks of winter, but he says it will be a mild 6 weeks of winter.
That's ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. A surprise move from Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito. First day on the job, he split with conservatives and blocked an execution in Missouri, saying that the method the state uses, lethal injection, is cruel and unusual.
He's not going to just simply follow the other conservative justices without applying his own intellect and judgment to the issues that are coming before him. On the other hand, you can't read too much into this because of the procedural posture of the decision. It's not the equivalent of a decision on the merits by the Supreme Court.
That's ABC News legal analyst and former White House counsel Brad Berenson. Not much action today at West Virginia's coal mines, aside from the safety checks Governor Joe Manchin has ordered. It comes after 2 more miners were killed in separate accidents yesterday.
With the current shift that is now working and each new shift after that, mine companies, supervisors, and the miners themselves are to engage in a thorough review of safety procedures before any work or production is to continue.
16 miners have been killed in West Virginia this year alone. President Bush heads to Minnesota today, next stop at his State of the Union roadshow. He's pushing the message he sent to the nation earlier this week, and tomorrow it's on to New Mexico and to Texas.
The proof was in the pudding. He doesn't give a damn about us.
Don't be surprised if the president plans a trip to New Orleans soon. There are a lot of people like that woman who lived there who are angry that Hurricane Katrina got only a passing mention in Tuesday night's address. This is ABC News.
Jane is 50 years old, just took up golf. She's got great form. Takes her 6-iron.
Oh, Leonard, stop using that voice.
Sorry.
Centrum Silver multivitamins keep up with your game. Centrum Silver's age-adjusted formula includes high levels of B vitamins, which emerging science suggests may help reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease.
She sunk the putt. The crowd goes wild.
What crowd?
Centrum Silver, adjusted for your age. Take with low-saturated fat, low-cholesterol diet. Research is ongoing and inconclusive, not intended to treat, cure, or prevent disease.
You may be sitting there right now wondering how you're going to make it through the day. Do you worry yourself sick, beat yourself up, or put yourself down? This isn't the real you. You used to be happy and have confidence in dreams, remember? Well, it's time to get it back. You owe it to yourself to pick up the phone and call for a powerful free tape that can help you get your life back. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please, let me help you help yourself. Call 1-800-500-2001. That's 1-800-500-2001. 1-800-500-2001.
A three-way race for House Majority Leader is down to the home stretch. The contenders, Minnesota's Roy Blunt, John Boehner of Ohio, and Arizona's John Shattuck. The winner replaces Tom DeLay, who stepped down after being indicted on money laundering charges. American car makers may be shifting back into high gear. Here's ABC's Aaron Katursky.
January was the first month U.S. automakers increased sales since the summer, when they stopped offering customers the same discounts employees get. General Motors, Ford, and Daimler Chrysler saw a 4.5% combined gain in sales, but their foreign competitors did more than twice as well in January. Toyota credited its hybrid model. Honda said a small SUV sold well. Foreign competition is one reason GM and Ford just announced plans to lay off tens of thousands of workers and close several plants. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
It's been said they make more money than men of average height, and this could be why a new Swedish study says taller men get better education and preferential treatment from their teachers. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brian Fire with your WGNU News update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, the execution of Missouri death row inmate Michael Anthony Taylor is on hold. Missouri corrections officials say Taylor, sentenced to death for the 1989 rape and murder of 15-year-old Ann Harrison in Kansas City, will not be executed today. The Supreme Court yesterday refused to lift a stay on Taylor's execution. A federal appeals court has yet to rule on Taylor's challenge of Missouri's use of lethal injection. Investigators are looking for the cause of a fire that heavily damaged a historic University City home. The fire broke out around 7 yesterday morning at a home on Princeton Place. The home, which is on the National Register of Historic Places, was vacant and undergoing renovation. No injuries are reported. Finally this hour, human testing is expected to begin soon on a potential way to block the source of respiratory diseases like asthma and chronic bronchitis. Researchers at the Washington University School of Medicine have found that two drugs have been shown to prevent cells from lining the air passages of lungs and help normalize the airways in mice. Dr. Michael Holtzman, the director of pulmonary and critical care medicine at Washington University, says even if these drugs work in humans, it won't really be a cure.
A more definitive and directed way of correcting the changes that occur in asthma and other diseases like asthma that have too much secretion. But it's not a cure in the sense that you take a pill and then go away and never come back again.
Holtzman says the drugs are now being manufactured by pharmaceutical companies. The study appears in the current issue of the Journal of Clinical Investigation. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle. Through February, purchase 4 tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive 3 complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Sam's Club. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and Remus Parish, no problems to report there. Eastbound 40 between 94 and Chesterfield Airport, everything's on the move. Eastbound 70 from Mid Rivers Mall all the way to Cave Springs, look for everything to be on the move. Westbound 270 from 367 to West Florissant, look for no problems to report there as well. Eastbound 40 between 141 and 270 looks good. Westbound 40 between 170 and Lindbergh looks good as well. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to 44, you have slow traffic. Eastbound 70 between T.R. Hughes and 79, look for slow traffic there as well. Southbound 170 at 40, look for some slight delays. And westbound 5570 at 64, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 64 between the 5570 split, you may have some delays going on there as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the gravel pit all the way into Laclede's Landing, look for no problems there. Northbound Illinois Route 3 from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect slow traffic. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Sam's Club. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low cost on items for your home as you do for items for your business. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly cloudy, 50% chance of rain this afternoon with a high in the lower 50s this evening. Partly cloudy, a low in the mid-30s. Friday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon with a high around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. Then on Saturday, colder, partly sunny with a high around 40. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have cloudy conditions and 39 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 39 as well. Stay tuned now. It's time for the award-winning wake-up call with your host, Liz Brown. It's a new segment with Liz Brown and Irene J. Smith. It's Eye on the Lou. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
It's time now for Eye on the Lou.
Welcome to the inaugural, the premiere, the very first, the beginning of something very special. This is the first edition of Eye on the Lou. Irene J. Smith, Irene J. Smith, Eye on the Lou. Welcome, welcome.
Good morning, Liz, and listening audience.
How we doing this morning?
Hey, it's great. I woke up. I'm walking. I'm in St. Louis.
All right. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Don't
well.
Start no stuff.
Yeah. So, where do we begin?
Oh, my, my. Why eye on the loo?
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me true. Look, we need to be looking critically at a number of issues that are impacting our community, but also are bouncing off and impacting throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, after a lot of talking about this and looking at things that are going
on. A little bit of cussing. Not from you, but from me. Let the record reflect.
You know who is the nice lady.
That's right. And who cusses and fusses. All right.
And really seeing a kind of a void
mm-hmm.
in terms of the discussion of not just political issues, but social issues. Other than, say, for an example, what you and Jamal are doing relative to executions in the state of Missouri, and at the same time educating the public about those issues that relate to that, we really have a void
mm-hmm.
in our city in terms of discussing political and social issues, not just for the St. Louis region, but nationally, other than what you normally do. But I thought it would be necessary, it would be beneficial, rather, for community to hear other things that are kind of slipping through the cracks,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And
like,
I think that is true from the perspective of, I pride myself on the wake-up call, doing international, doing global, doing United States issues, things like that. But there also needs to be a focus and a connection on a local level.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, we looked at, hey, Channel 2. Everybody's talking about the police beating, you know, excessive force. I'm sitting there looking, Chino, California, you know, Iraqi veteran, military officer, shot on camera by the police. They tell him to get up. He gets up. They shoot him. The guy shoots him. One officer shot him. He shot two or three times. You know, so this issue of excessive force and police violence and violence throughout our community is not something that's just limited to St. Louis.
Very good. So we got our eye on the loo.
Yes, we do.
On the loo. All right. So what's the first show? What's our first show going to be about?
Oh, boy.
I love this. What are we going to be talking about today?
Hey, let the games begin. Let them begin. I mean, wow. Look, we got a lot going on here. You know, you look at April. We got the city races going on in April. You know, we may look later at some of the county races, but certainly the school board election in the city of St. Louis, and baby, is it forming up.
So we're talking about today's topic is Let the Games yes. Begin. We're going to be talking about elections coming up.
Yes, we're going to be talking about upcoming elections. We're going to be talking about petition drives because there are a number of constitutional amendments that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, the juicy at the end of the hour, we're going to be talking about word on the street.
Word on the street. Y'all don't want to miss this because you're going to hear some stuff.
All right.
You're going to hear some stuff. So let the games begin, Irene J. Smith. Where do we begin?
Come on. Let's look at this school board election, Liz. We've got quite a few candidates,
mm-hmm.
some of them that we're familiar with
mm-hmm.
and some of them we are not. Interesting. You know, Sister Clinksdale is making her rounds. You know, she was the honored guest of Freeman Bosley at the board.
What'd you say? Wait a minute. Darnetta Clinksdale lives in South St. Louis. I know South St. Louis because I've been protesting in front of her house before. I know she lives in South St. Louis.
She lives on Bland, maybe?
She can't get no love from her white alderman. What's up with that? What you mean? Freeman Bosley introduced her.
Not only did he introduce her, she sat by him at this past Friday's board meeting.
Well, let me get this straight. Darnetta Clinksdale, unlike pushing magnet schools north. Okay, she went north to get support. She didn't put no schools north. She closed all the schools north, but she went north to get some support. Ain't that some stuff?
Well, I'm just hopeful that the community is very alert to this. There is going to be a so-called blackening, I'm for you, I'm a sister,
mm-hmm.
Approach with respect
to... There's going to be I'm down with you, I'm one of you type, me black too.
All right, mm-hmm. Now that's the conversation, the lingo of today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to be very watchful of that, because I think we need to take a critical eye at all of these candidates. And some of them, of course, I favor. But I think as community, we need to get a commitment from them as to what the agenda is going to be. We know the things that are needed to make better schools. And so we need to get commitments from them that they're going to allocate resources and work for resources to, one, engage the community, engage parents in the process. A lot of money has been spent, but I've seen no engagement.
But here's the thing, Irene. Is it too late for a commitment of what I'm going to do? Shouldn't the assessment of Darnetta Klingstell be solely on what she has done?
Oh, I think no doubt. Now, sister girl, we agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Darnetta has already, she has a record.
She's like Sam Alito.
She has a record.
We know what she is going to do. We know what she is not going to do.
And we know what she has done.
There you go. So anything that she says, she's not the one that we need to be asking the question of. What are you going to do? Because, yes, she has a record to run
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
And the only time that she, apparently, that she goes north, the only time that she sends any resources north is when she's running for office.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what's up with Freeman Bosley introducing her? What's up with that? I mean, what's up with that?
That was his honored guest.
Okay, I saw hands raised as to, I don't know.
Hey,
I don't
well,
know.
I have my suspicions,
okay.
You know, and I think, again, it goes back to what we said earlier. It's like, I'm one of y'all now.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now. I'm a sister after all.
I'm blackening up.
You know, despite the fact that I've assisted and spearheaded. Because, you know, keep in mind, sister girl is the president of the school board. And she was, even though a new girl on the block came in as the president.
Mm-hmm.
And she assisted in helping to dismantle public education.
And the other piece of this also is that she stood silent in the investigation of the stealing from, of the money mismanagement from Vachon.
Exactly.
She stood, actually,
she allowed a press release to go out.
In her name. Mm-hmm.
As if, though, it had come from her.
That's right.
Without saying anything about it. And basically, that's my problem with Ms. Klingstell, is that basically she has allowed herself to be used by the power structure to the disadvantage and the dismantling of public education in the city of St. Louis. And then we have the mayor's recent appointee.
Mm-hmm. Jim Slay.
The sister insists on giving the man a new last name.
A hyphenated name.
Now, she's going to give him a hyphenated name, knowing full well what his name is.
James Buford.
It's my understanding Mr. Buford.
See, you can't even say, it doesn't even sound right to say Buford. You got to add the Slay.
Boy, this is just staring it up in here. Mr. Buford, is my understanding, has undergone some surgery, I guess, to his hip. I know for years he has had problems. And sometimes, as my neighborhood grandmother told me, when that bone get to grind and bone to bone, you must have the surgery. So it's my understanding that, of course, he's a candidate.
He's a Republican, a black Republican candidate for the school board.
And again, we need to stay tuned on that. Watch it. Just watch it.
Here's the thing. What are the committee people going to do? What are Democrats going to do? What's the first ward committee woman going to do as a Democrat? Is she going to endorse a Republican? Are people going to cross party lines? Or what are Democrats going to do? Committee women, committee men going to do all across the city? Are you going to cross party lines to endorse a Republican?
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be quite interesting because there are some people, I mean, I've talked to some seniors, you know, and they'll talk about, well, you know, he has stood up on some issues. And I said, no, if you look at where he has been relative to the St. Louis Board of Education and the positions that they have taken that I believe are not in the best interest of our community, he has not been on the right side.
Or he has been silent. Or he has been compromised.
And I believe the Urban League had, or may still have, a contract with the Board of Education.
Yes, they do.
And so the question becomes, while many may say, well, it's not his contract, but the question is whether it gives an appearance of a conflict if he is still then the president of the, I mean, not the president, but a member of the school board. You know, there was a lot of discussion with Flint Fowler run. I know one of your concerns was that he wouldn't be available to attend attend school board meetings.
And that has borne out to be so.
It seems that that has borne out. Mm-hmm. And the question becomes, does Jim Buford, number one, even have the time to come to school board meetings?
And he's missing them right now. Missing them right now.
That's
whatever
right.
reason, is missing them right now. So those are serious and legitimate concerns. And again, the whole thing that has a smell, an odor to it about this particular race, board of the school board race, is the stink of it, the influence of people outside of the community or people with an agenda that has nothing to do with the education of our children.
Exactly. And the other thing, and there are some other, of course, Peter Downs is running,
right.
And I think Peter has, to a large extent, shown exactly where he's been. He's certainly done an exemplary job of bringing information to the community in terms of exactly what was going on. And, of course, through the School Watch every week, we get updates on what's going on with the Board of Education. Of course, if you would go to the meeting, you probably would get even less information because of the way, it's almost like it's not an open proceeding. So Peter certainly has been quite helpful in digging, getting information, inquiring about information. So he's one candidate.
And Bill Haas withdrew from the race?
Bill Haas withdrew from the race. We've got
Dennis McLean.
Dennis has been active in the community. He certainly has been an individual that when he said he was going to do something, he did it. I certainly am looking forward to seeing what Dennis is proposing with respect to the St. Louis School Board. We also have Miss Jones.
Mm-hmm.
What's her first name? Donna?
Donna Jones.
Donna Jones. I believe she's a parent, just like Peter Downs, who has children in the St. Louis Public Schools. So certainly for me, I'm going to tell you quite frankly, if you're a parent, you got one up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And your children.
Peter Downs is a parent also.
And that's what I said. Peter Downs is also a parent.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's something because a lot of them, they want to tell you what to do with the St. Louis Public Schools, but they don't want their children to attend.
They wouldn't put their children in. And a key point is if Frances Slay's appointment to the school, what's her name? Now her name escaped me, but she sends her children to New City School.
Oh, okay. Veronica O'Brien.
Not Veronica O'Brien. Veronica O'Brien, I'm talking about the liaison, the liaison from Slay's office. Her name will come to me. But she sends her daughter to New City School.
Oh, Wabi?
Yes, Robin Wabi sends her children outside of the district.
So they want to tell you what to do with the school system, but they don't want their children to attend the St. Louis Public Schools.
Okay, well, let's move to the August race.
The other thing in April, we should have some ballot measures.
Okay.
City ballot, and this is a recall thing. We probably will talk about that a little bit more in detail later in another show. But
there's a huge issue. There's a huge
exactly.
issue on the ballot in April. It's a charter amendment. They want to amend the charter. And why do they want to amend the charter?
Because too many people are getting recalled.
So they want to change it to make it more difficult to kick people out of office.
Exactly. And that needs a full discussion, and we will have that.
We absolutely will. Who introduced it? We know who introduced that bill?
I think that was Jennifer Florida from the 15th Ward.
And was there much discussion on that?
Yeah, there was some discussion. It was very interesting. There were actually only three individuals of the Board of Aldermen who voted against it. I'm happy to say and proud to say my alderman, Charles Quincy Troop, voted against it. Shrewsbury voted against it. And, of course, the new alderman for the 24th, Waterhouse, who took Tom Barr's place. And, of course,
he said, I'm down with it. I am down with it. You bet I'm for this. How else would I have gotten here? I'd be stupid if I said no to this.
In fact, I think that was his very first vote.
If you all recall, Tom Bauer was removed via the recall.
Right.
So
right.
Everybody else wants to change up on it.
That's my understanding. They want to have some changes to make it more difficult for you, the citizen, to recall an alderman who you believe is acting in contrary to the interest of your community or is influence peddling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think later on we're going to have a lot of discussion about this issue of influence peddling, particularly with respect to development projects in the city of St. Louis.
And influence, you say tomato, I say tomato, water carrying influence.
Stealing,
tomato. All right, let's move to August here.
Ooh.
So Suck it, let the games begin. Oh, my God.
My goodness.
Ooh,
August is going to be my. Ooh.
Lock and load.
Lock and load. You know, where you want to start, local or you want to start state?
I want to start. Let's start local.
Probably one of the most interesting local races in August, as it's framing out, is the license collector's race. And apparently, my former colleague, Michael McMillan, had aims on and had been, I guess, promised.
No, to the legal technical term, is dibs.
Okay.
He had dibs
on the license collector office. And it's been rumored, it's been said, it's been discussed that there was actually a deal cut with South St. Louis, or the powers that be in South St. Louis. They said, okay, Brother McMillan, we think you're an honorable person. We believe that you should be licensed collector. You can have this position, and there won't be a white candidate running against you.
But he didn't read the fine print of the deal. He didn't read the fine print.
And, you know, we have Greg Daly, who in turn is rumored and is being discussed that he'll be running for a collector of revenue. And then this deal that I don't know, I guess only certain individuals knew about it, you won't have a black opponent from North St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is,
oops,
you know, the problem is, I guess they didn't check with Sister Maida Coleman.
Well, no, he didn't read the fine print, because their agreement was that you wouldn't have a white candidate. Okay?
That's right.
Okay?
No guarantee.
Read the deal. Okay, read the deal. They said white candidate. They said nothing about a black candidate.
Right.
And Maida Coleman is now...
And Maida Coleman is in the process of gathering and garnering support. And a lot of people, it was interesting. My mother called me, kind of upset. She watches Donnybrook. She said, they are crazy. You know, how can they say this isn't fair to Michael McMillan? She has a right to run for office if she wants to. But it seems that the brother is kind of disturbed about this, because this was supposed to be my spot.
Well, and again, I guess apparently enough people don't understand the rules and dibs. Okay, when I call dibs on it, it makes it mine. Nobody else can have it.
Yeah. And I think it speaks to the fact that we as communities should not allow backroom deals to move the way candidates emerge and how we vote. It's going to be interesting
and
to see.
And we need to talk about, you know, what we're getting in either one of them.
Right.
We need to
see what
dibs or no dibs.
Well, you know, they say, well, the license collector is no big deal, but certainly for Michael McMillan, that certainly would be perceived as a promotion.
Absolutely.
Maida Coleman, you know,
well,
state senator.
It's job security. Job security.
So, and we have to look and see in terms of what each of the candidates are offering. And I don't think Greg Daly is going to get by without having an opponent as well. You know, you always have Howard Hayes back in the wings.
Should the powers to be, should some outside boiler room deal making, cigar smoking folks that were nameless, faceless folks be deciding who's going to be the leader, the political leadership?
Absolutely not. And that is precisely why we are facing some of the problems that we're facing in our community.
It's amusing to see how this plays out, because Maida, I thought she was going to do the state thing.
Well, Sister decided that obviously that perhaps that was not feasible.
Well, I heard other stuff out there that the push for the statewide race was in anticipation of cutting a deal for a lesser race.
All right.
There folks out there are saying that as well, that it was a strategy engaged in from the beginning.
Right. And I think as well, I think the Democrats want to spend as little money as possible, statewide races, senatorial, congressional races, as little as small amount of money as possible, you know, looking toward November and not spending a lot of money in August.
And we have to take a break. Before we get to our break, I've got to remind you that Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway, Alderman Charles Quincy Troop wants all First Ward residents to come out to the redevelopment plan around, oh, how about this, First Ward Education, Youth, Community, and Culture Center, major development occurring for West Florissant Union and surrounding areas. Stand up, show up, get to this meeting this Saturday. That's the day after tomorrow. First Ward Community Meeting. This is Charles Quincy Troop asking his residents, his citizens, to come out to the United House of Prayer at 3300 North Kings Highway. We got to take a break. This is Eye on the Loop. Me and Irene J. Smith will be back at you right after this.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Account Temps. Westbound 5570 Exchange. Look for an accident that's been cleared. There's a traffic backup that has emerged. Westbound 70 at Cole Street. There's an accident. Left lane is blocked and traffic is backed up through the Poplar Street Bridge. Northbound 55 from Park Avenue all the way to 70. Look for slow traffic due to an accident on westbound 5570 Exchange. 141 at 44. Look for a vehicle on fire. Reported with being a trash truck. Northbound 55 from Bayless to River to Pear. No problems reported. Eastbound 40 from 94 to Chesterfield Airport is on the move. Eastbound 70 from Midway Mall to Dumbbell. No problems there. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry to West Florissant. Look for a very heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason Road. Slow traffic. Westbound 40 between 170 and Lindbergh. Look for normal traffic. Northbound 270 at Gravoy and 44. Slow traffic. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes to 79. Look for heavy volume there. Southbound 170 at 40. Slight delays. Eastbound 44 at 270. No problems to report. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Cleeds Landing. Look for no problems there. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic on those ramps. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Account Temps, the world's leader in specialized financial staffing. When you need temporary accounting or financial help, call Account Temps. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of rain this afternoon with a high in the lower 50s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Friday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon with a high in the around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy till early morning, becoming partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. And on Saturday, colder, partly sunny with a high around 40. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 39 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Fields reporting 40. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's the new segment, Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Want to do something sweet for your sweetie? Want to show the world that he or she is loved? Want to be on the radio? Why not let everyone know that you love your baby with an on-air I Love You message on Valentine's Day? On Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, we'll play your I Love You message. And if you're a little shy, that's okay. Liz can do it for you. So if you need to let him or her know you care on Valentine's Day, call 367-2743. That's 367-2743. And say, I love you on Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. Weekday afternoons, immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. And stay tuned for today's solutions with David Lenihan from 4 to 6.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else, are you going to get a good shop on? You're going to get it done at Sears. Sears, Sears, Sears. You don't have to drive out to the mall. You don't have to put $15,000 worth of gas in your tank to get to the mall and get a Sears shop on. No, you don't. The only Sears in the city of St. Louis is located right in your neighborhood, 3425 Union, 3425 Union. We have your washers. We have your dryers. We have your microwaves. We have your dishwashers. We have your big screen television sets. We have your DVD players. And for those of us that need the January, treadmills, they've got those too, the best tools in town. You don't have to go anywhere to get to a great Sears. Go to 3425 Union in your own neighborhood. Sears, tell them I told you to. Go get your shop on.
What you need to know when you need to know it. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Now back to Eye on the Lou with Liz Brown and Irene J. Smith right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Eye on the Eye on the Lou, Eye on the Lou. Irene J. Smith.
Yeah, we need to get through this a little bit more of the August race and then move into a discussion about the initiative petition.
Because we're talking about let the games begin.
Well, the games will be beginning and we will be discussing
all
later
right
on.
All
but
right
look
now.
Here, ooh, we got a senatorial seat. Patrick Daugherty's seat is coming up.
Battle of the Babes! Battle of the Babes! And a couple of dudes up
oh,
in there,
Oh, some dudes
there's
up, in,
dudes
there
up in there,
you
too.
You know, we I have my state rep, Yaphet El-Amin. We have Representative Amber Barkins. We have Gambaro.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Liz's favorite person.
You're talking about Malcolm X, right?
No, Malcolm's not running. Boy, if he could. Jeff Smith.
We're talking about Jeff Smith, the white guy with a degree in African history, and now he knows it all. What would Malcolm do? Would Malcolm run in a race against two African women that have more experience than the white guy? What would Malcolm do? What would John Brown do?
Well, now, I tell you. John Brown probably would be taking somebody out. Okay. Malcolm would say, by any means necessary, I don't think I'm going to get up in this.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
All right now.
And then we have, Amber Barkin's seat is being vacated.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, of course, Jamila Nasheed, who is running. We have, these are known candidates and an anticipated candidate.
When filing date has not been closed.
No, it hasn't opened. February 28th.
Lock and load.
It will be opening, and we have Amber Barkin's husband, Sean Sims.
What?
Keeping it in the family.
Keep it in the family. And we're going to have that discussion about this, I don't know.
All in the family.
Dynasty, moving on up type of a
thing. And word is... I ain't gonna get the word on the street, but I believe that former Alderwoman Sharon Tyers may also be a candidate in this race. So this is gonna be an interesting race. It's a discussion that I looked up one day. I was going into the pie, and there was Bob Borlett driving the bus down, the LEAP bus, and it's my understanding that he, who was previously a state rep, will also be running.
Who's that?
Robert Borlett.
Okay.
So it's going to be interesting. We cannot wait until February the 28th. We know for sure.
And February 28th is?
The opening date for filings for state seats.
Okay. Let the games begin. You know, I wonder,
I don't know. You have to check. But make sure those signs are up at the where we register or where we sign up for placement on the ballot. No weapons allowed.
Oh, and this is
no, because people may be packing. People
oh yeah,
pack.
This is gonna be deep. But one thing for sure, Sean Sims and Jamila Nasheed, they're out there already. Mm-hmm. So that's gonna be interesting to watch. The 57th is gonna be interesting. We got all kind of rumors going on. You know, mm-hmm. First they said Irene J. Smith was running for state rep, and then we have Joe Palm is up, and you know we don't know if Talib Deen El-Amin will be running
again. The family thing, that's the husband of
I don't know.
Wait a minute, that's the husband of Yaphet, right?
Yes, yeah,
husband of Yaphet,
so and committeeman of the first ward.
And committeeman of the first ward. So we have a husband, two husbands of state representatives rumored to be running.
Well, one is not a rumor, he's definitely out,
definitely
in it, you know. But I think those right now are really the big ones, Liz.
Okay, well, then,
but we're gonna see, we're gonna move on to the initiative petition.
Yeah, we're gonna move on to the petition drive because this is something that could easily slip under the radar.
Exactly.
They don't know what is really going on. And these are a big deal. We have some petition drives going on right now. But prior to the drive, they have to get certification, I believe, from the state in order to.
Right. They have to get certification of the petition by the Secretary of State's office. All of these petitions that we're talking about have been certified by the Secretary of State, so they can begin circulating and have started the circulation process.
What's the one that is the most interesting to you, Irene? Because there are a number of them on the ballot.
Ooh, to me, the most very interesting one is funding public education.
And they shouldn't call it funding public education. They should call it vouchers. It's a voucher. It's a voucher bill.
Says funding education, but it's a voucher piece.
It's one of those, you know, No Child Left Behind, Clean Air Act, those types of things where the wording is the opposite of what this is about. This is a voucher bill.
Right.
And we've had some, and we have about 5 minutes left here in this segment, but the auditor has taken a look at the cost of
yes, very definitely. There's some costs. But let's get into what exactly the petition calls for.
Okay.
You know, it allows the use of public money for religious purposes and institutions. And basically it entitles anyone up to the age of 21 can have a free education in the state of Missouri. It increases the state revenue for public education from 25% to 33%. And it's funding school vouchers at 100% for public institutions and 75% for non-public students, and allowing tax credits.
And the cost of this comes out to about $3.5 billion.
Exactly.
According to the state auditor's office, Veterans Department will lose money. Children's education will lose money. Public schools will lose about $2 billion if this goes through. DESE would lose $22 million. The Department of Health and Senior Services and Social Services would lose $15 million. A lot of people would lose a whole lot, billions of dollars,
exactly,
if this bill goes through.
Exactly. And the other thing, this would prohibit school districts from imposing additional testing standards or raising funds through taxation. So in other words, this would be the only public source, unless there was a dedicated fund or something, but not through taxes. No taxes would go toward public education.
And we're going to talk more about this in the next couple of weeks. So
exactly.
Let's move on to some of the other issues.
They're going to have one for what they call a technological parks. And although they say it with an S, it's really only for one part of the state.
And they're collecting signatures to see if they can get this on the ballot. For when? When would this be?
In November.
In November.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think they're pushing for November.
And then there's a couple more that's on the ballot. The stem cell one.
The stem cell research one.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that would, you know, there's been a lot of discussions and, you know, former Senator Danforth is spearheading this,
yes,
and many others. This would ensure that Missouri patients have access to therapists and cures and allow Missouri researchers to conduct research.
And I just want to put this out there to people. This is a petition drive. People are going to be on the street corners, out in the streets, in the malls, trying to get you to sign onto a petition. So if you see a petition that says this is about funding public schools,
you need to not sign
it. You need to should know that this has nothing to do with funding public schools. It's a voucher program. And then we have a wonderful Medicaid reform
going on. Yes, Medicaid reform petition drive that's going on.
That would reinstate?
It would reinstate state Medicaid health care programs and services for eligible low-income Missouri residents. It would modify the income eligibility limits for Missourians who receive permanent and total disability benefits and aid to the blind, because there are a number of programs that benefit individuals who are blind. It also includes health care coverage for custodial parents of children who are eligible to receive Medicaid benefits, and it will continue the state Medicaid program beyond the current deadline of June 30th, 2008.
And we have about 5 seconds left here, Irene, and this is one that basically would undo what Boyd... We gotta take a break. This is Liz Brown, Irene J. Smith, I on the Lou. When we come back. Word on the street. We're taking a break, folks. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Irene J. Smith, I on the Lou. Stay with us.
Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Duluth. A group called Scholars for 9/11 Truth is asking for an international investigation to find the truth about what happened on that day. Several scholars and engineering experts, including past Wake Up Call guest Professor Morgan Reynolds, say the government is withholding important facts about what happened on that horrible day. The group feels the White House will never reveal all it knows, and that Congress will never demand a full accounting either. The group questions the 9/11 Commission conclusions because its investigation was led by Philip Zelikow, who was on the Bush transitional team in the National Security Agency sector. And he even co-wrote a book with Condoleezza Rice, so there's no way he could be impartial. A number of other curiosities have been raised by the group, and they include... How could fires take down 3 steel frame buildings in one day when there was never one case before in history? The steel in the Trade Center was tested to withstand a temperature of 2,000 degrees for 6 hours, yet the jet fuel only burned at a temperature of under 1,800 degrees. BBC reports since 2001 have stated 5 of the 19 hijackers have been discovered alive in Saudi Arabia, although the FBI said they were killed in the crashes. And the plane that hit the Pentagon disappeared from radar contact near the Ohio-Kentucky border, but then reappeared just before it struck the building. How did that happen? This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update, brought to you by...
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Alderman Charles Quincy Troop, Alderman of the 1st Ward, wants you to come out to a redevelopment meeting at 3300 North Kings Highway from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer. What is this about? Well, 1st Ward residents, this is about redeveloping your community. We're talking about the creation of the 1st Ward Education, Youth, and Community Culture Center. We're talking about the completion of Kings Heights. We're talking about infrastructure stabilization in Norwood Courts. It's time to show up. It's time to give input. It is time to take part in... the future of your community. Be there the day after tomorrow. That's Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer. Alderman Charles Quincy Troop wants you to be there. 3300 North Kings Highway.
Hotep, this is Pastor Ray Higgins, and I would like to invite you to tune in to the On One Accord broadcast every Sunday morning from 6 to 8:30 a.m. for the best in liberated gospel music, live talk radio, and powerful messages about truth and right spirituality. Join me right here on WGNU 920 a.m. every Sunday morning from 6 to 8:30 a.m. and let's set our people free. Hotep.
Want to do something sweet for your sweetie? Want to show the world that he or she is loved? Want to be on the radio? Why not let everyone know that you love your baby with an on-air I love you message on Valentine's Day? On Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, we'll play your I love you message. And if you're a little shy, that's okay. Liz can do it for you. So if you need to let him or her know you care on Valentine's Day, call 367-2743. That's 367-2743. And say, I love you on Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to I on the Lou. Irene J. Smith, what time is it?
Word on the street.
The
word on the street. He said, she said. The word on the street.
Girl, did you hear about
the word on the street?
Man, did you know the word on the street?
I had no idea. Yeah, he was like that.
The word on the street.
You've got to be kidding. She said what?
The word on the street.
Now, I don't know if this is true, but the word on the street is...
Word on the street, girl. Word on the street. Where we begin.
You know, let's go Jeff City.
Let's go to Jeff City.
Property rights day.
All right, now.
You know, coming out of... your state rep.
All right.
Connie Johnson's office, you know, with a group of people. I'm up there, Reverend Fowler, a bunch of folk. Harold Crompton and two other.
Harold Crompton, the president of the NAACP.
That's right. And I believe he's on MSD's board.
Appointed by Francis Slay. Go ahead, O.
Coming out, you know, I'm walking on down the hall, you know, and Reverend Fowler overhears him saying, lady asked him, Caucasian, say, are you with? You know, are you with them? Are you
white lady asked him, asked black man, Harold Crompton, president of the NAACP, are you with all these black folks and white folks that are up here talking to folks? He said,
We don't do it like that.
What you say? The president of the NAACP says that we don't organize like this? And what?
We don't organize. We make phone calls.
Oh. You got a phone call lately?
No, I haven't.
All right. No.
I haven't.
Okay, so now you understand why your NAACP is like that. He said to the white lady, we don't do that. All right.
And I know earlier we talked about the Dornetta being introduced by Bozzy, but, you know, tongues were kind of wagging trying to figure out how come Steve Conway didn't introduce her.
Back.
You know, why did he not even stand up and say yes? And I also recognize, which sometimes we do. Sometimes other members of the board may have an honored guest that actually lives in your ward, but you certainly stand up and acknowledge that, okay, that's my person too.
Oh, well, here's my favorite word on the street. Pimping your ride, St. Louis style.
Lord,
pimping your ride, St. Louis style.
Look here.
And it ain't in a good way. It ain't in a good way. Look here.
Board Bill 81, I believe, introduced by Craig Smith, which was debated and I believe passed finally last week.
It hasn't been signed by Slay yet.
And it's rumored that perhaps Slay may veto it. Basically, you know, your music too loud, the police can seize it. So if Junior is driving your car.
Oh, it's worse than that. It's worse than seizing the machine that, I mean, this was a boombox piece of legislation.
Oh, yeah. Also, if there is a boombox in your car that exceeds these specifications, then merely that it's in your car can subject your car to seizure as well.
Let's be clear. Let's break it down so folks can understand seizing all this.
Okay, we'll take it.
They will take your car.
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 They will take, and what is fascinating to me is that, and we had aldermen talking out of both sides of their mouth. We had aldermen that were saying, we can't trust the police. We need to have a civilian review board. And the same, if Freeman Bosley comes to mind, the same alderman who said, we can't trust the police. We need to have a civilian review board. It said, I trust the police to give them this kind of power to snatch somebody.
Discretion.
Of course it is.
It's too broad. It gives entirely too much discretion to the police.
People need to be calling their aldermen.
They need to be calling.
I know you didn't know that they said that they passed a law that a cop can take your car because they say your music is too loud.
Exactly.
That is crazy.
It's quite dangerous.
Okay, word on the street, what else you got, girl?
Recalls not limited to North St. Louis and South St. Louis.
What you say?
Word on the street is that the Central Corridor may be involved in a recall.
What you say? Who you talking about?
The Central Corridor alderwoman, although they try to say Terry Kennedy is part of the Central Corridor, is Lyda Crewson.
Lyda Crewson?
Much discussion in a couple of coffee houses in the Central West End talking about some redevelopment that people are really perturbed about, and that possibly a group of citizens have formed to circulate petitions to begin a recall of Lyda Crewson.
You're kidding.
The Central West End is not excluded from the recall fiasco.
There you go. There you go. Now what? One more. I want to talk about this other word on the street here. What's this about, slays or split?
The whole split on the senatorial race?
What you talking about?
Well, you know, one slay may support Jeff Smith. Another one may support Amber Borkins. Some deal-making, deal-a-fine up in here. Jeff Smith might be supported by Junior Slay.
Francis.
Yes, the man. Senior Slay might be supporting Amber Borkins.
So what does that do? What does that do to the dynamics of this race?
Dynamics, 23rd ward, big voting ward. I don't know what percentage of that ward is in the senatorial district. I think a sizable portion, maybe all of it. Interesting.
And what is also interesting is this the debate that is going on with the word on the street with
who put who in?
There you go.
Word on the street is that the Barking forces had drafted Gumbaro to run, and I can't see the committee people supporting him since he was in favor of getting rid of them.
Well, what would be the strategy in that?
Take votes away from Jeff Smith.
So this is a race that people really need to keep their eye on.
Oh, very definitely. I mean, you got all kind of words on the street. You got words on the street that, Representative Yaphet El-Amin contributed a lot of money to Jeff Smith's congressional race, mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons why he entered the race. So this is mixing up a lot of words on the street, and we're saying these are words on the street. We're not saying that these are facts, but for sure, there are certainly four folk in the 4th Senatorial District, Senatorial race.
Stay tuned, and it's one to watch. And if you have a word on the street that you want to get to us, all you got to do is email us at wordonthestreet@lizbrown.com. That's wordonthestreet@lizbrown.com. And Irene, that brings us to the end of Word on the Street for this week. Tell us about what's happening next week. What are we going to be talking about next week?
Oh, man. Next week,
we're going to be talking about education.
Ooh,
we're going to be talking about this whole charter piece, right?
Right. And we must. And we're going to be looking at it in depth. Give you a lot of opportunity to get some information.
And we're
going to
go back.
We're
going to take a step back in history to look at the vote from last year.
Exactly.
To talk about that it didn't pass last year. We're going to talk about some amazing money. We're going to do a money trace of the money that your elected officials got in that race last year to try to get this bill passed, because there's going to be a whole lot of money flowing into the state of Missouri on this issue.
And oh, very
because
definite.
Because it flew into Missouri last year.
Exactly. And again, if you see those initiative petitions on the street, you know, and people will say, well, this isn't the law. This won't make it. This just gets it on the ballot. We don't even want it on the ballot.
We don't want it on the ballot.
We don't even want it on the ballot.
If it says it's for schools, know that it ain't. It's a voucher. You think that people would be honest and say it's a voucher program, but they're trying to play you.
It's about vouchers. It's about dismantling public education.
All right.
It's about taking your tax dollars, doing whatever they want to do with it.
All right. That's the last word. Irene J. Smith, Eye on the Loo. I'll see you next week.
Yes, you will.
All right, folks. I'll be back. Stay with me.
AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. It's been a tough day for U.S. troops in Iraq. Five more have been killed, three in a bomb attack south of Baghdad, a fourth by small arms fire also in the capital city, and a Marine fatally wounded in Fallujah. At least 245 Americans have died in Iraq since the war began. The trial of former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein continued today without him, without his co-defendants, and without his attorneys. ABC's Haider Hamza has more from Baghdad.
The chief judge asked the prosecution to start calling in for the witnesses to testify. The court listened to the testimonies of only two witnesses before closing the session and setting the 13th of this month as a date for the next session.
The trial's been adjourned till February 13th. A surprise move from the newest Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito sided with the more liberal members of the High Court on a death penalty case.
At issue, Missouri's 11th-hour request to the Supreme Court to open the door to lethal injection of a death row inmate. Convict Michael Taylor had won an appeal from a lower court earlier in the day, arguing that lethal injection was cruel and unusual punishment. Voting to give Missouri the go-ahead, Chief Justice John Roberts and Justices Scalia and Thomas. In his first case, Alito sided with the inmate and the court's remaining five members.
ABC's Luis Schiavone in Washington. President Bush heads to Minnesota today to push his State of the Union message. Tomorrow it's on to New Mexico and Texas. There are plenty of people in New Orleans who would like to say something to the president. They're not happy with him that he only gave Hurricane Katrina and the rebuilding effort a passing mention in Tuesday night's speech. The White House says Congress has dedicated $85 million to the region, but that's not good enough for this woman.
The government's job is to protect me. And that's what I expect them to do.
Some areas of the hurricane-damaged city took another beating last night. A windy storm knocked down trees and ripped off some roofs. Forecasters are trying to determine if it was a tornado. This is ABC News.
This is Larry King. Did you know there's finally a different form of vitamin E? Ester E, a unique form of natural E, captured for the first time in a supplement. It's the only E I take because only Ester E protects its antioxidant benefits until your body is ready to use it. And it's all natural, so it's readily absorbed. Take Ester E, like me. E-S-T-E-R-E. Advanced protection. Ester protection.
Look for Ester E and Ester C everywhere vitamins are sold.
If you're sick and tired of watching your eyes get weaker and weaker every year, repeat after me. I will take a stand against my weak eyesight.
I won't use my glasses as a crutch.
And I will no longer accept stronger prescriptions year after year.
Call right now for a free video to find out how you can strengthen your eyesight using the safe, natural solution. It's called the See Clearly Method. Call 1-800-400-9144. That's 1-800-400-9144. 1-800-400-9144.
The nation's most famous groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, saw his shadow this morning, and according to legend, that means six more weeks of winter, but this man's not concerned.
I don't really care, because I'm flying back tomorrow to Florida, and it's summer there 360 days a year. So I'll get out of this cold tomorrow.
Yeah. He's around the thousands who are on hand for the big event. A college cheerleader's been told it's your job or the squad.
Go fight, win!
East Tennessee State University student Kimberly Sam says she was dismissed from the cheerleading squad because she works at a Hooters restaurant whose uniform includes snug-fitting athletic shirts and shorts. The 18-year-old freshman says she's old enough to be allowed to work wherever she wants. Athletic director Dave Mullins won't comment on Sam's dismissal, citing student privacy laws. Hooters VP Mike McNeil in Atlanta says he stands behind the employee and says the school should reinstate her to the cheerleading squad. Daniela Bellata, ABC News.
And I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryant-Meyer with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a violent arrest by Maplewood police this week continues to attract attention and outrage. Several dozen protesters were outside the Maplewood Police Department yesterday in response to officers' treatment of Edmund Burns after a chase from Maplewood to North St. Louis. The Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression wants all of the officers involved to be fired and charged with assault with the intent to kill. Burns was wanted on several outstanding warrants and remains in custody. Allegiant Airlines is expanding its service out of Mid-America Airport. Tim Cantwell, the director of the Metro East Airport, says in addition to its Las Vegas service, Allegiant is now offering two nonstop round-trip flights a week to Orlando, Florida. He says he hopes that service will grow this summer. This is good news for the troubled airport, which lost Transmeridian Airlines in October. For more information on flight times and prices, log on to www.allegiantair.com. Finally this hour, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is under-recognized and under-diagnosed. That's according to a recent national survey that reports that as many as 24 million Americans have impaired lung function, yet only half of those have been diagnosed with COPD. Dr. Dennis Doherty, the chairman of the National Lung Health Education Program, says the St. Louis area is no exception.
St. Louis, you have about, I'd say, 47,000 people who have been diagnosed with COPD. But again, remember, half of it is missed or not acknowledged. So you might have over 100,000 people there who have the disease. Half of them don't know it. When they have these early symptoms, they should see their doctor so they might slow the progression to the more severe components of the disease.
COPD is caused primarily by cigarette smoking. Coughing is an early sign of the disease. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. New, the Illinois Lottery's Ticket for the Cure. 100% of proceeds support the fight against breast cancer. Play Ticket for the Cure today, because when you play, everybody wins. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Bryant-Meyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Northbound 55 between Potomac and Park. Look for slow traffic due to an earlier accident on westbound 70 at Cole. Northbound 55 in Virginia. There's an accident on the right shoulder and traffic is slowing back to Loughboro. Northbound 55 between Carondelet and River de Pere. Look for no problems to report. Eastbound 40 from 141 all the way to Mason. That traffic is easy. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs, from Mid Rivers Mall all the way to 370 looks good. Westbound 270 at West Florissant. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 40 between Hampton and Hanley. Look for slow traffic there as well. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to 44. You've got slow traffic in pockets. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes to 79, very heavy volume going on there. Southbound 170 at 40, look for no problems to report getting on to 40 off of 170. Eastbound 44 at 270, no problems there. Eastbound 40 between Ballas and Lindbergh, look for slow traffic there as well. Eastbound 40 between Brentwood and Hanley, you've got slight delays. Westbound 5570 from the Exchange onto the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 at Ball Avenue and the 5570 split, look for slow traffic there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at the Gravel Pit and Laclede's Landing, nothing to report. And northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge, there's congestion has been cleared, so you should be good to go. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle through February. Purchase four tires at your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive three complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of rain in the afternoon, a high in the lower 50s this evening. Partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Friday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. And on Saturday, colder, partly sunny with a high around 40. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 37 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Fields reporting 39. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Revolution in the air, young brothers, brothers and sisters. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, young brothers, brothers and sisters.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight, remember? I will never say that progress has been made. You stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow made.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, brother.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equality.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. The long distance toll-free number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Local number 454-0400. Also, the Wake Up Call can be found archived daily at whiterosesociety.org, as well as streamed daily on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net or lizbrown.com. You can email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. Those are our digits. Handle your business. It's Thursday. It's 8 o'clock. It's time to talk about justice for Reggie. I am joined, as always, in this hour by Jamala Rogers. Jamala, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good after the U.S. Supreme Court decided to stay the case of Michael Taylor. So,
and with the amazing vote of Samuel Alito.
Sam Alito's first case. He voted the right way. So all we can do is say, you know, that's a positive thing. I don't know what he's going to do beyond that. But, you know, we were able to stay the execution for Michael Taylor, which really should have happened on February the 1st.
And I want the audience to understand that this is an hour that we dedicate to a particular case for a particular cause. Reginald Clemens, a young man that is on death row for a case here in the city of St. Louis. And Jamal is going to be bringing us up to speed on the specifics of that case. But also I want people to know that this is about Reginald Clemens, absolutely, but it's also about educating the public about the death penalty. It's about advocating for a moratorium, an end to the death penalty. It's about tying the pieces together, bringing the pieces together, because this is not a local issue. The crimes that are being committed against people in the name of the death penalty is not something that is exclusive to the city of St. Louis. It is a nationwide problem. And the Reginald Clemens case really, really illustrates every wrong aspect of the death penalty. And Jamala, bring us up to speed on Reggie's case, please.
Okay, just for those listeners who may not be familiar with the case, this is a case that happened in 1991 where four young men went to hang out at the Chain of Rocks Bridge and came across three white young people, Tom Cummings and Julie and Robin Carey. And before the night was over, both the Carey sisters were in the Mississippi River. Initially, Tom Cummings confessed to the crime, and during the night when the police officers went back to the bridge, they found a flashlight. That flashlight belonged to a law enforcement person whose name and code were on there. And at that point, the chain of events that had happened so far began to reverse. And the before the next night was over, you had two black men who had been beat into confessions. The other were underage, and one was white. And as they went into a trial, the Daniel Winfrey, who was the young white man that was with Reginald Clemens, Marlon Gray, and Antonio Richardson, was used to testify against the other three. So we already have, unfortunately, the execution of Marlon Gray last October, and we are trying to stop this execution of Reggie Clemens. So there's been a swirl of activities around the campaign. The priority has been the petition to Matt Blunt to look at the facts and slow the process down so that we can see what pieces have been missed, and people have been out there hustling. We've had a Reggie Sunday on January 15th. That has been extended because people didn't find out about it in enough time, and so we're extending that all the way up to April, the first Sunday in April. So people go to church and they didn't participate on January 15th, you still have an opportunity to do that. And we're still looking for places to put petitions in. We're going out weekly with the petitions. We'll be out at the pageant this weekend. We got a crew there that will be getting petitions. Last weekend, you know, there were several events going on, including Globetrotters, and we had people down at the Globetrotters basketball. So people are really into it.
People were at the iced tea event as well, that they're out there. Is there going to be a point where we can do a count so that people can kind of know where we are?
Yeah, I think there will be. We had said at the end of every month, and the 31st just happened, unfortunately, that beating by the police sort of shifted us just a bit in terms of getting that count in, but we will be getting the count in, and we're actually looking at a goal of about 2,500 every week, and so we want people to participate in that, because it's not just the details that's going to bring that for us. It means that everybody who's got the ability to talk has to be able to get those petitions signed, whether it be family members, neighbors, club members, church members, but we all need to be about this. And when I heard that there's another petition on the street that we should not be signing, and I'm saying, okay, let's be clear. Reggie's picture is, on most of the boards, but if it says the clemency petition to Matt Blunt, we definitely want you to sign it.
And also, where can people pick up copies of the petition in order to get on the street and get people to sign, or get family members to sign?
Well, every Monday at the Rowan Community Center, people can
What's
pick
the
up That's at 1401 Rowan. And people can pick up as well as drop off petitions, because we want to make sure that as soon as we get completed petitions, they get turned in. So every Monday.
Can people get them on the website?
People can get them on the website. They can also, if they think they cannot get out and about, we're telling people to sign the online petition, but please don't sign both. So if you have an opportunity to get out and about and sign a hard copy, please do that.
And the address of the website?
The address is www.justiceforreggie.com, and that's all one word.
And if people want to call you to find out what they can do, what's the phone number?
The phone number is 367-5959, and I have to confess, we have not been keeping up with that, so a lot of times the it gets full, and so people just have patience with us because we're actually on the street doing other work, but we will get back to you.
And if somebody wants to help the organization manage that, they can volunteer to do that.
Definitely,
as well.
Definitely. And that's why we, you know, a lot of the people are asking for petitions, and that's why we've created just every Monday you can come by. But there's also other places that you can get them. They're at Legacy Books. They're at Ujamaa Bookstore. They're at the ACLU. And those sites are also listed on the website. So we want to make it as easy as possible for people to get those. But we will mail them to people if they can't get to us.
And the other piece of this is I want to kind of tie in some of the Reggie's case, because we've talked about Reggie's case being actually a perfect storm of everything wrong that could happen in a trial coalesced, came together at this point in Reggie's trial. We had police brutality. We had prosecutorial misconduct. We had horrible defense counsels. So it was awful. Mm-hmm. It was, and then we have racism in it as well. So every bad thing that could happen in a trial happened in this case.
So yeah, there were many barriers that just prevented justice from prevailing. And so I think, you know, now at this point where we only have the governor to appeal to, we have to send a strong message to Governor Blunt that, you know, this case, we've already lost one defendant. He needs to be about the business of seriously looking at the facts in the case.
And we have to get to one of our guests. We have a guest on the line joining us from New York City, Christina Swarn. She is the director of the Criminal Justice Project with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. Christina Swarns, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Jamala.
Jamala, you want to start?
Well, Christina has done a number of cases with the Legal Defense Fund for the NAACP, and so we really wanted to kind of look at the national scope of the cases, kind of check out the similarities. Is Reggie's case an anomaly, or are most cases looking like this? Who are the defendants that are ending up on death row? So, Christina, if you would, you know, kind of give us an overview of those cases and some of the problematic pieces that you have faced.
Sure. That's, you know, you've given me quite a mouthful of stuff to work with here. When I reviewed the information about Reggie's case, the first thing really that jumped out to me was that his case really does have in it a lot of the issues that we have seen nationally and the folks that do death penalty full-time have seen nationally that appear in the cases of those who have been exonerated from death row. You know, there is clearly a pattern that has developed over the years when you look at the cases of those who have been freed from death row. And you see a lot of the same issues popping up that you have in Reggie's case. You see, first of all, issues regarding quality of counsel. Lawyers who are overworked, who are undertrained, who are not provided enough resources, are handling, you know, these extremely complicated, time-consuming cases, and because they don't have the training, because they don't have the money, because they don't have the experts, they're not doing the job that needs to be done on these critically important cases. Secondly, you see in all of these, and many of these cases of exonerees from death row, just what Liz talked about, police and prosecutorial misconduct, false confessions happen all the time in the cases of those who have been exonerated. And that's a critical piece of how people really get convicted, as I'm sure you both will agree. Jurors really rely on and believe and put faith in testimony that someone has made a statement that implicates themselves in an offense. What we have learned, however, is that a lot of those confessions are actually false. DNA has shown that time and time again. We also see prosecutorial misconduct. And a lot of the times, prosecutorial misconduct occurs and is able to occur because of the poor quality of counsel that these folks have been given.
And it also occurs because of the atmosphere that encourages it as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, these are always, invariably, death penalty cases are big cases. These are high-profile cases. The police and the prosecutors are under an extraordinary amount of pressure to get a conviction, and that often takes precedence to the search for truth, the search for justice. And, you know, time and time again, you see cases where prosecutors withhold evidence of innocence. They present questionable evidence, often in the form of informants or people with whom they've made deals. And that evidence, we know, is notoriously unreliable. And that, again, is a factor that pops up time and again in the cases of those who have been exonerated across the country. You know, it would be impossible for us to have this conversation about Reggie's case and really about the death penalty period without talking about race. Many of the people who have been executed in this country, many of the African-American defendants who have been executed in this country, have been convicted by all white juries. That is a phenomenon, you know, that goes on consistently in the prosecution of capital cases. You see prosecutors time and again taking great efforts to ensure that African-American people do not serve on capital juries.
And Christina, it is not simply a phenomena of death penalty cases. It's a phenomenon in criminal cases, period.
Yes.
They had to create a rule, the Batson rule, to deal with the fact that prosecutors all across this country, I know in the city of St. Louis where I practice as a public defender, that the dead prosecutor, Buzz Westfall, would instruct his prosecutors on how and why to strike black jurors.
And that's absolutely right. And we have seen, and that's not just in St. Louis. The Supreme Court this past term struck down a case out of Texas where the Dallas County District Attorney's Office actually had a manual that said, and you know, I'll quote them, do not take Jews, Negroes, Dagos, Mexican, or a member of any minority race on a jury, no matter how rich or how well educated.
Mm.
In Philadelphia County, a county in which I practiced for many years, we had a videotaped training released to the press by a prosecutor training young DAs, saying, do not accept, you know, black people. Do not accept young black women are the worst. They consider themselves oppressed in two ways, because they're women and they're minorities. Don't take old black men. Don't take, you know, it was just a laundry list of how and why you cannot seat African Americans on juries, period. You're right, not just capital juries, on juries, period. But, you know, obviously in the death penalty, you know, which just plays out to this extreme extent. So, I mean, the issues that pop up in Reggie's case pop up across the country. They are the very reasons why the Legal Defense Fund has been against the imposition of the death penalty, you know, from its inception. It's the reason we continue to fight the death penalty, and we will continue to fight it.
So, Christina, with the false confessions, you say that's a compelling piece for most juries. How do you use the confession piece and still let them know that, you know, this person had been coerced, or, you know, you didn't get the whole confession?
Sure.
How does the defense attorney really kind of balance that out?
Sure.
There's a perception out there that nobody would confess
exactly.
to something that they didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's no question that it's a difficult road to hoe to prove that a confession is false. The way it has been done most effectively in most of the cases across the country is really through DNA. It's been through the rape murder cases and the straight rape cases, where you have a defendant who has been convicted, where the police have testified and they have presented evidence that this person, you know, admitted that they committed a crime. Years later, you know, after 10, 20 years in jail, you know, DNA emerges and the technology improves and the defense lawyers, you know, make the request, they get the evidence, and they get the testing done, and it establishes that this person who confessed did not actually commit the rape. And so that's just a scientific way that can prove that a person didn't, you know, didn't confess.
Well, how unfortunate is that? Because that is so after the fact and based upon luck.
Exactly. And I will add to that, it's also unfortunate for those, because the majority of cases in this country do not involve
DNA
evidence. Mm-hmm. The majority of people on death row, the majority of people doing time in prison do not have, you know, semen, blood. It just doesn't involve a rape. You know, it doesn't involve, you know, there wasn't substantial blood evidence, or, you know, all the various types of forensic evidence that can be subjected to DNA testing isn't available.
And Christina, if I may interrupt again, there's also the piece that gets people on death row and gets people in jail are eyewitnesses.
Yes.
And there's and race factors into this again, because there is a cross-cultural racial inability of identification that, since we live in a country that doesn't want to deal with the issue of race, they deny that when you are trying to identify cross-culturally, you don't get it right.
That's right. And that is one of the other biggest issues in the exoneration cases across the country, is you see time and again, you know, that there was a witness who identified the defendant, and, you know, again, that's a compelling piece of evidence for jurors.
Yes, it is.
They say, you hear the witness, I will never forget that face. You know, this was the worst moment in my life. There is no way I will forget this face. The truth of the matter is, under the stress and pressure of the situation, when there is cross-racial, identification issues, people are unable to make accurate identifications, especially when you add the pressure of police who are trying to get a conviction, who are often suggestive when dealing with witnesses in terms of making identifications. And you see it time and again. Again, DNA has come in and really, I think, has just put a spotlight on just how many problems there are in the criminal justice system.
And we have to take a break. We're talking to Christina Swarns, director of the Criminal Justice Project with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She's joining us from New York City. This is Justice for Reggie. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. I'm Liz Brown. We're taking a break. Stay with us.
I've got a hard road to travel and a rough way to go. And it's a hard road to travel and a rough way to go. But I can't turn back. My heart is fixed, my mind's made up. I'll never stop, and my faith will see me through.
Good morning. 31 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Account Thames. Northbound 55 between Carondelet and River de Pere, no problems reported there. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason, everything's moving smoothly. Eastbound 70 from Zumbel all the way to 94 looks good. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry to West Florissant, traffic is easing. Westbound 40 between Hampton and Hanley, look for slow traffic in pockets. Northbound 270 at Gravois and 44, slow traffic there is pockets. Eastbound 44 at 270, look for normal traffic. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Lindbergh, look for slow traffic there. Eastbound 40 between McKnight and Hanley, slow traffic as well. Northbound 270 from 40 to Olive, look for heavy volume. The Olive exit is also backed up at this hour. Westbound 5570 to Exchange all the way into the PSB. Traffic congestion is cleared. Westbound 64 between Bow Avenue and the 5570 split, look for that to be rolling along fine this hour. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the gravel pit on to Laclede's Landing looks good. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street on the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge, no problems there to report. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Account Temps, the industry leader in financial and accounting temporary staffing. Call or visit us today at accounttemps.com. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. Mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of rain this afternoon with a high in the lower 50s this evening. Partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. For Friday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy by the afternoon, a high around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. And then on Saturday, colder, partly sunny with a high around 40. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 38 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 40 in clouds as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. We'll take another look at your News, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Esther Wright, General Manager of WGNU Radio. As you know, we are in the process of changing and starting new things at WGNU. To make the most of what you have to say and to air the best part everyone wants to hear, our engineers will ask you the subject you want to talk about as we start a new screening process at AM 920. We want to bring out the issues that matter most to you. Thank you for your cooperation.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in 2 to 4 weekday afternoons on AM 920 WGNU. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA and let's go take on the day.
Take a Mason Hollow Maple Syrup Sugar Bush tour at 14489 Springfield Street in Grafton, Illinois from 10 to 4 through mid-March. Tours take from 30 minutes to an hour and include free sap and syrup sampling. Call the Alton Visitor Center at 1-800-ALTON-IL for more information. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Charles Quincy Troop, the First Ward Alderman, wants to invite you to the First Ward Community Redevelopment Meeting this Saturday. That's the day after tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway. The redevelopment plan focused on First Ward Education, Youth Community and Culture Center, Euclid Plaza Development, Infrastructure Stabilization in Norwood Courts, completion of Kings Heights. Show up, stand up, input into this. You want to have input into what's happening in your community? This Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., United House of Prayer, Alderman Charles Quincy Troop wants you to be there. First Ward residents.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears. Where else?
Oh, where else? Where else? Indeed, the only Sears in the city of St. Louis. You do not have to put $15,000 million in your tank to go to the mall and get your shop on at the Sears there. No, you don't. Full service. Everything. Washers, dryers, dishwashers, DVD players, treadmills, tools. They've got it all right there on Union, 3425 Union. You do not have to go outside of your community. Support your community. Buy in your community. Go to black-owned, black-operated Sears at 3425 Union Sears. Jerome Williams, get your shop on and tell him I told you to.
Want to do something sweet for your sweetie? Want to show the world that he or she is loved? Want to be on the radio? Why not let everyone know that you love your baby with an on-air I love you message on Valentine's Day? On Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, we'll play your I love you message. And if you're a little shy, that's okay. Liz can do it for you. So if you need to let him or her know you care on Valentine's Day, call 367-2743. That's 367-2743. And say, I love you on Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
My bad brother, I love you, and I'll never try to hurt you. I want you to know that I'm here for you forever, true.
Welcome back. I'm Liz Brown. It's Thursday, 8 o'clock hour. This hour, we always focus on justice for Reggie, justice for Reginald Clemens. I am here with Jamala Rogers. Jamala, welcome back.
Thank you.
And our guest this hour is Christina Swarns. She is the director of the Criminal Justice Project with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She's joining us from New York City. Christina, welcome back.
Thank you.
And you were talking to us about the challenges of these cases.
I had a question for you, Christina. In terms of the number of people who are exonerated, there's a prevailing view around a minority, hopefully, of and particularly white people, because when I go out and about, I'm asked this question, and that is, are people being exonerated because they are innocent or because technicalities are able to overturn their convictions? What's the research around that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, my first, you know, I sort of laugh when people always, you know, throw around the phrase technicalities.
Don't you just, what do you mean a technicality?
You know, I'm always like, your technicality is my constitution.
There you go. There you go.
You know, so, you know, it's only a technicality when it, you know, when it works for someone else. They would not be calling it a technicality if it was used for themselves. I think the reality is that the list that most people look to is that, which is generated by the Death Penalty Information Center out of Washington, D.C., that has 122 people since 1973 having been released from death row. Those folks on that list have been released through a variety of means. But the bottom line in each one of those cases is that there is substantial evidence of innocence. It's not just those who have been, you know, have had their cases overturned based on claims that have absolutely nothing to do with, you know, issues of guilt and innocence.
And Christina, is there or are there any prosecutors out there that have suffered any repercussions as a result of innocent people being released from death row? Because they're the ones that are saying, he's guilty, he did it, I swear my mama's grave he did it, and you all need to know that he did it. Did they suffer any repercussions?
I'm so glad you asked me that question, because the answer is no. To date, there has been no consequence to any prosecutor, irrespective of how corrupt or how, you know, bad their conduct has been found.
How they lied, how they cheated,
yes,
how they broke the rules.
There has been absolutely no consequence to any prosecutor in the country. Once in the state of Illinois, a prosecutor was actually put on trial, only once in history, for his behavior, his misconduct in securing a capital conviction. The jury in that case acquitted him.
And their prosecutors, I think, with the exception of the state of Washington, prosecutors have that thing called prosecutorial immunity.
That's right.
Where even if you got them dead to rights, you can't go after them.
That's right. That's right. That's 100% correct. And I would just say, additionally, it's not just, you know, in terms of civil liability. There is also no consequences in terms of law license. You know, there's no bar consequences to these prosecutors for their behavior. There's no, you know, sanction. The bar doesn't come down and say, you know, you should be punished, you should be reprimanded, you should have some consequence with respect to your practice of law. There is nothing that happens to the prosecutors in these cases.
And so is there any opening for people to push to make that happen, even if it's on a bar level, in terms of at least some inconvenience of not being able to practice for a year or whatever? It just seems like that's an area where the power is so unilateral and unconditional that it's almost nothing that people can do. So these people know they can lie, steal, kill, you know, harass, intimidate, and with fear.
With immunity.
Right.
You know, this is an area where I do think that people can take action. I mean, remember, the prosecutor's office is an elected position. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not something that is bestowed on someone, you know, by grace of a governor or the president or by, you know, by God. You know, this is a position that's elected. And so if you live in a county or you live in a city where you see prosecutors engaging in misconduct and you don't see a consequence, you know, take it to the ballot box.
And
make a change.
And I think also, Christina, in order for people to understand how whack this is, they also need to understand that I, as a defense attorney, you, as a defense attorney, you can be sued. We can
Absolutely.
Lose our license.
Absolutely.
If we do not defend people according to the rules. So how could it be that I could do something, you could do something, and lose our license because we didn't follow the rules, and he can do something that causes somebody to die, and he can't, and nothing will happen to him?
That's right. That's 100% right.
Huh. Mm. So let me ask you this. Do we know of, beyond reasonable doubt, that there has been an innocent person executed in the United States of America?
Well, I know that you folks in the city of St. Louis are, you know, probably closest to finding that out.
I mean, after the fact. Have we had cases where someone has been executed and something that people just, we know, Marlon Gray was one person, but like you said, DNA seems to make the difference for people out there.
Sure.
Do we have a case where someone has been executed and DNA has subsequently exonerated that person?
No, that hasn't happened yet. Like I said, the case of Larry Griffin. is going on right now. There's substantial evidence that he was innocent. This is one of the majority cases. It's not a DNA case. It was an a one witness ID case, and we've just talked about the difficulties and the unreliability of identification evidence. And Mr. Griffin was executed, notwithstanding the fact there were substantial doubts about his guilt. The district attorney is now looking into that case with an eye toward, determining whether she agrees with the evidence that was presented by Sam Gross and others, to see, whether, in fact, we are right, that Mr. Griffin was, in fact, executed, even though he was innocent. There's another case out of Texas that's also in the same posture. Again, it's not a DNA case. There's just substantial evidence of innocence. The witnesses who had testified against this defendant have admitted that they lied, and an investigation is going on into that case. But no, to date, as we speak right now, there is no person that we have found have been unequivocally found with DNA to have been executed, although innocent, although there are numerous cases across the country where, the evidence is very strong that has occurred.
And we have, everybody thinks that at least prior to this administration, people have thought that there was a constitution that protected all of us. But it seems as though that despite the fact that we have a constitution, it still varies from state to state. The rules and the regulations as to the execution of people. Alabama, you're going to get a completely different treatment in the court system that's governed by the Constitution than you would in New York City.
That's right. I think, one of the, biggest examples of just how different folks are treated, especially in the death penalty context, but really in the macro criminal justice context, is in terms of quality of counsel.
And
if
can we hold that thought, please?
Sure.
Hold the quality of counsel thought, because that is a very important point. I am talking to Christina Sworn. She's the director of the Criminal Justice Project, NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She's joining us from New York City. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday, and I'm joined here with Jamala Rogers, the campaign director of Justice for Reggie. I'm Liz Brown. We're taking a break. Stay with us.
Taking off my shoes, jumping in the water, washing away these blues. Now it's the ocean, current takes hold. Words already been spoken, tales already been told, hearts already been broken, wounds already been healed. Do you want to be loved? Do you wanna be loved for real? Do you wanna be loved for real? Wanna be loved for real?
This global news report is brought to you by attorney Albert Walton, helping people get paid for over 25 years. This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Chicago. Another large manufacturer is announcing large-scale reductions. Kraft Foods says it's going to do away with 8,000 jobs and close about 20 plants in a restructuring move. The cuts involve about 8% of its workforce and are expected to save about $700 million. These new job cuts, come on top of another 5,500 job cuts it announced last year. Kraft also reported it made $773 million in the fourth quarter of last year. And Dateline New York. Problems have surfaced at the World Bank, and they're centering around President Paul Wolfowitz. The bank's internal investigation unit is looking into allegations that procedures were short-circuited, allowing two longtime colleagues of his to be hired into the World Bank as advisors. Robin Cleveland and Kevin Kellams worked with Wolfowitz in the Bush administration, and they're believed to have gotten a salary much higher than they should have, plus received open-ended contracts. Another of his hired advisors in question is Carl Jackson, a professor of the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins University. Wolfowitz used to be dean of that institution. This is your wake-up call global news update.
When you've been hurt in an accident, there are many things to consider. Doctor's bills, time lost from work, medical costs, ongoing injuries, pain and suffering. For over 25 years, attorney Albert Walton has helped people get paid for their property, paid for their pain and suffering, paid for their loss. before you talk to anyone. Call 314-388-3400. That's 388-3400 and talk to attorney Albert Walton for free. If you've been hurt, let attorney Albert Walton's knowledge and experience help you get paid. 314-388-3400.
This is Esther Wright, General Manager of WGNU Radio. As you know, we are in the process of changing and starting new things at WGNU. To make the most of what you have to say and to air the best part everyone wants to hear, our engineers will ask you the subject you want to talk about as we start a new screening process at AM 920. We want to bring out the issues that matter most to you. Thank you for your cooperation.
This Saturday, it's time for you to get involved. First Ward Alderman Quincy, Charles Quincy Troop, wants you to come out to a First Ward community meeting. This is the First Ward. They will be holding a community redevelopment meeting this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway. Major development occurring on West Florissant Union and surrounding areas. Facade work on West Florissant to Kings Highway. Infrastructure stabilization in Norwood Court. Stand up. Get up. Participate in a First Ward meeting for redevelopment this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway, Charles Quincy Troop, Alderman.
Science or religion, Republican or Democrat, politics, education, crime, or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies. What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan, on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU. Monday through Friday, 4 to 6.
Try your best.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I ran away today, ran from the noise, ran away. Don't want to go back to that place, but don't have no choice, no way. It ain't easy growing up in World War III. Never know what love could be that I've seen. I don't want love to destroy me like it did my family. Can we be a family?
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Thursday, Justice for Reggie Thursday. I am here with the campaign director of the Justice for Reginald Clemens campaign, Jamala Rogers. And joining us from New York City is Christina Swarns, director of the Criminal Justice Project, NAACP Legal Defense Fund. Christina, welcome back.
Thank you.
And I stopped you in the middle of the
Yeah, no, I think one of the issues you had asked to me, you know, about the differences and why we see differences across the states in terms of, you know, I guess rates of death sentencing and rates of execution, even though we're all under the same constitution, the same rules. And I think one of the big answers to that is how the states deal with quality of counsel for people who are charged with capital crimes and really with crimes, period. And I think one good example of that is the New York experience. New York didn't have the death penalty for a long time, and then in the mid-90s brought it back, like many states are doing across the country. But when New York brought back the death penalty, it implemented by statute a very thorough and comprehensive organization, well-funded, for the defense of those who are going to be charged with capital crimes. And what you saw was, although prosecutors throughout the state were definitely, you know, aggressive about seeking the death penalty and aggressive about pursuing the death penalty, with these kind of well-funded, well-trained, well-qualified lawyers in place, you didn't get that rate of death sentencing. You didn't see the numbers of people being convicted of murder and sentenced to death. And you compare that with jurisdictions like Alabama, where they, you know, they don't even have lawyers to handle many of the post-conviction cases that are still pending, folks that are on death row, that do not provide anywhere near enough compensation, much less the kind of money for investigation, for experts, the kind of things that are basic for a misdemeanor trial, putting aside, you know, a capital murder trial, where you don't see that kind of investment in fairness. You then see these exponentially higher numbers of death sentences and convictions. And I think that's one of the reasons you see these sort of changes and these variations across the country.
And how could it be fair, if we're trying to assess whether the system is fair, how can it be fair that somebody, but geographically, it will determine whether or not someone ends up on death row, as opposed to what they did?
It's not fair.
No, it just isn't.
It's just not. It's just not.
And what does it also say about the effectiveness of the pursuit of justice like this? Because if prosecutors cannot get convictions and do not get convictions when they are equally matched,
that's right,
then what does that say about the people wanting the death penalty for real? Because just like anything else, when people hear both sides of it, the decision is no.
Exactly. It changes the picture completely when you have, you know, evidence. Yeah, like you said, an equal match, a fair fight in the courtroom. It changes the picture completely.
And not to the side of the prosecution.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. 90% of the time, these cases go to trial, these capital cases go to trial with a completely one-sided picture of the story, you know, which is often, as we've discussed, not accurate. You know, it's distorted in its most egregious forms. And, you know, it's not the fault of the jurors. The jurors are only given, you know, this information which portrays the defendant as this crazed murderer.
But also, Christina, it's not just that the jurors are given just one side of it or a certain side of it, but jurors are picked, selected, so that they're going to be the kind that are inclined to only hear one side.
Well, that's true. And that's one of the ways that really the laws are stacked against, you know, folks that are charged with capital murder. You know, under the United States Supreme Court, under the laws of our Constitution, it says that if you have a moral or philosophical opposition to the death penalty, you can be removed from service. If you have a moral or philosophical predisposition to the death penalty, you are not. You are welcome to serve.
Absolutely.
And as we know, our community, the African American community, because of our experiences historically with the criminal justice system, you know, are overwhelmingly opposed to the death penalty. So what that results in is, you know, through legal measures, numbers of African Americans being excluded.
It just makes me pull my hair out when you get into a jury selection, a voir dire situation, and you see all these black folks stand up and say, I can't judge another person. What do you mean? Realize what that means when you say that.
And I think, people, it's interesting because I think our folks need to think about that, because we will all say, and it's not just that, because let's be real, a lot of my friends, my colleagues, my family, they don't want to serve.
They don't want to serve.
You know,
either.
You don't have the time, you don't have the money, you have other obligations. But you know what? As we, as a community, exempt ourselves from service in these cases, and we don't have the right to then turn around and complain when we see, you know, all of these young black men sentenced to death by all white juries.
And in the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, we have about 3 minutes left here, Christina. What is it?
Oh, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund is one of the nation's oldest civil rights law firms, established, you're going to make me lie to you, in the 50s. The first director of the Legal Defense Fund was our first Supreme Court Justice, our African-American Supreme Court Justice, Thurgood Marshall. And so in its, you know, infancy in the early days, the Legal Defense Fund lawyers represented freedom riders. We litigated Brown versus Board of Education. We have handled voting rights and litigated on behalf of our community to ensure voting rights to this day. And as you know, that is an active practice these
hourly
days.
Practice.
And we continue, and we have always been involved and invested in the fight against the death penalty, and we are involved and invested in the fight for criminal justice reform, just as we, you know, watch young black men being, you know, shepherded into prisons and jails across the country in grossly overwhelming numbers.
Christina Swarns, director of the Criminal Justice Project, NAACP Legal Defense Fund, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And Jamala, we're coming to the end of this show. What do we have to, what do we want to remind people of?
Well, we want to remind people that we are hitting the streets with the petitions, and people that can't hit the streets, they can hit the quietness of their home, of their church, of their workplace, but we need to get those petitions signed. Give us a call at 367-5959 or visit the website www.justiceforreggie.com for updates and to get the petition.
Phone number, please.
Again, it's 367-5959.
5959, 367-5959. Jamala, thank you so much.
Thank
I
you.
Will see you next Thursday, Justice for Reggie Thursday.
All right.
All right, folks, I will be back after the break. Stay with me.
Power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Latest from ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. They may not have much in common, but Bono and President Bush would agree faith can make things happen. ABC's Luis Schiavone has more from this morning's National Prayer Breakfast in Washington.
The event attracts people of all political and philosophical stripes. Even rock star Bono was there.
I want to suggest to you today that you see the flow of effective foreign assistance as tithing, which to be truly meaningful will mean an additional 1%. Of the federal budget tithes to the poor.
President Bush responded,
Bono, the true strength of this country is not in our military might or in the size of our wallet. It is in the hearts and souls of the American people.
The president noted Americans not only have a right to choose their faith, but also to choose not to profess a faith. Luis Schiavone, ABC News, Washington.
First prayer, then a pitch. President Bush hits the road today as he continues to sell his State of the Union address to the American people. Next stop, Minnesota. There are a lot of residents in New Orleans who are wondering, did you forget about us, Mr. President? They're not amused that Mr. Bush gave Hurricane Katrina and the rebuilding effort just a passing mention in Tuesday night's address.
We're flabbergasted, we're insulted, we're outraged, we're angry.
We're Americans. We're part of this country. You know, do we not count?
Well, it's very discouraging. It adds to the depression.
The city took another hit last night. A windy storm ripped roofs off of some homes, knocked down power lines. Forecasters are trying to determine if the storm was a tornado. Five more U.S. troops were killed yesterday in Iraq. Three soldiers while on patrol south of Baghdad, a fourth by small arms fire also in the capital city, and a Marine fatally wounded in Fallujah. Major General Rick Lynch says attacks on U.S. troops are actually decreasing.
If you look at November, December, and January, all three of those months had total numbers of casualties 1,000 less than the month of October.
This is ABC News.
This is Larry King. Did you know there's finally a different form of vitamin E? Ester E, a unique form of natural E, captured for the first time in a supplement. It's the only E I take because only ester E protects its antioxidant benefits until your body is ready to use it. And it's all natural, so it's readily absorbed. Take Ester-E, like me. E-S-T-E-R-E. Advanced protection. Ester protection.
Look for Ester-E and Ester-C everywhere vitamins are sold.
If you're sick and tired of watching your eyes get weaker and weaker every year, repeat after me. I will take a stand against my weak eyesight.
I won't use my glasses as a crutch.
And I will no longer accept stronger prescriptions year after year.
Call right now for a free video to find out how you can strengthen your eyesight using the safe, natural solution. It's called the See Clearly Method. Call 1-800-400-9144. That's 1-800-400-9144. 1-800-400-9144.
Andrea Yates left a Texas prison today. An appeals court rejected her 2002 conviction in the drowning deaths of her five children. She'll wait for her next trial at a state mental hospital. If you're tired of winter, you won't want to hear this.
Every February 2nd, thousands of people converge on this small Pennsylvania town from all directions. People like Tim and Laura Dornan of Louisville, Ohio.
That's just something to do in the middle of the wintertime.
Midwest winters can be hard on a person.
Yeah, and we were desperate for entertainment.
Like watching a groundhog make a weather prediction.
He came home and told me what we were going to do, and I started laughing.
Tim even bought a furry souvenir groundhog hat. You know, one of those funny ones.
I have had worse hats.
Happy Groundhog Day. Jim Hickey, ABC News, Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
And if you're wondering, Phil did see a shadow 6 more weeks of winter. Something to consider when you move, how many supermarkets your new neighborhood has, how big are they? A new study shows areas that are more affluent tend to have larger ones that have more nutritious foods at lower prices. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, St. Louis police officer Matt Browning doesn't know what to think about the excessive force that was possibly used on a suspect by Maplewood and St. Louis City police officers earlier this week. Browning, who lost both of his legs in an October 2004 accident involving a drunk driver, says he will reserve judgment until all the facts are in. Browning says while the incident does look bad, sometimes there are things going on that an eye several hundred feet in the sky can't see. 2005 is being called a difficult year for Anheuser-Busch. That's according to Vice President and Chief Financial Officer Randy Baker, who yesterday released the company's financial results for last year.
After 6 years of double-digit growth, earnings per share declined 11%. At our domestic beer company, sales results were disappointing but showed considerable improvement in the second half. Revenue per barrel declined slightly in 2005 as we narrowed promotional price premiums to competition.
AB officials also report that fourth quarter 2005 net sales were essentially level and earnings per share decreased 33% for the quarter. Finally this hour, police departments around the St. Louis area are getting help protecting their officers. American Equity Mortgage has donated $25,000 to Mothers Against Drunk Driving's Band with Blue program. The money will provide police departments across the St. Louis area with reflective vests, portable breath testing devices, and training to learn new techniques on dealing with drunk drivers. This is the largest single donation ever given to the Gateway chapter of MAD. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Sam's Club. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low cost on items for your home as you do on items for your business. Sam's Club, we are in business for small business. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by TomTom.com. Southwest Avenue at Sulphur, there's a report of an accident there. I-44 rest area is closed until March. Crews are installing new sanitary lines and water lines. Route Z, the eastbound 70 is closed from March due to construction work. Traffic detours to Interstate Drive into Wilmer, then back to the South Service Road into Winsville Parkway, then back on the eastbound 70. Eastbound Olive at Chesterfield Parkway, there's roadway construction there. Right lane is closed. Shoto is closed from Vandeventer through 39th to rebuild the bridges and the roadway. The eastbound exit ramp from 64 onto Shoto is also closed at this hour.
Eastbound 44 from 50 to Washington. Look for road construction there. Left lane's closed. Southbound Lindbergh at New Jamestown, there's road construction there. Right lane is closed. Pretty much the road constructions are up at this hour. Everything else seems to be moving freely. Nothing major to report. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by TomTom.com. TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of rain, possibly in this afternoon. The high will be in the lower 50s. For this evening, partly cloudy, a low in the mid-30s. Friday, partly sunny in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. And on Saturday, colder, partly sunny, a high around 40. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 38 degrees under cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 40 in clouds. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Pushing target at center range. I have no response unknown.
You're listening to one of the most advanced and highly mobile surface-to-air weapon systems utilized by the U.S. Army. It goes by the name of Staff Sergeant Patrick Dolman, crew chief of the Avenger Air Defense System and an Army of One.
For more information, call Sergeant First Class Mural at 314-487-7771. Paid for by the U.S. Army. GoArmy.com.
Hi, my name is Cheryl.
Hi, my name's Doe.
And we are the hosts of the new Crime Time Live talk show on WGNU.
If you have a question that you've been dying to ask a private investigator,
we will take your questions and discuss topics that you won't want to miss every Monday night at 10.
Need to get a background check?
How do you protect yourself when looking for Mr. and Mrs. Wright?
Can't find someone that owes you money?
Find out how on Crime Time Live, Monday nights at 10.
You're listening to AM 920 WGNU.
I see you. I'm hearing revolution in the air.
And sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown. My goodness gracious, we have a whole lot of stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Please don't forget that the wake-up call is archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. And the show is also streamed at WGNU.net or LizBrown.com. That's LizBrown.com. Also, you can email me at revolution@LizBrown.com. And we are iPodded as well at whiterosesociety.org. Those are my digits. Handle your business. From Xenia to Zimbabwe. You can hear the wake-up call. I was noticing in the news today, George W. Bush is doing the thing, as he does on a regular basis. He is, most of this administration, George W. Bush has been in campaign mood. Today is no different. A couple of mornings after the night before, talking about the State of the Union address, George W. Bush is out across the, scurrying across the nation, banging the drums. We don't need no stinking warrants. Is the discussion that he is having. Not too long ago, as I recall, State of the Union address. Not too long ago, George W. Bush was beating the drums in campaign mode, talking about immigration. What are we going to do about immigration? He got several of his ardent supporters' knickers in a twist over his position on immigration. I don't recall immigration taking up in much, if any, time in the State of the Union address the other day. But we need to discuss this issue of immigration. We need to talk about the Minuteman Project. We need to talk about Border Patrol. We need to talk about illegal aliens. We need to talk about immigration. We need to talk about American laws and all of that stuff. And we're going to do that this morning with our guest, Rosalinda Guillen, the Executive Director of Community to Community Development, joining us from Bellingham, Washington. Rosalinda, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you all doing?
Outstanding.
Great.
And we also have joining us from Arizona, Jennifer Allen. She's the Executive Director of Border Action Network in Arizona. Jennifer, good morning. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
And again, welcome to the show. Our number here is 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Jennifer, I want to start with you. What should we be talking about when we have this discussion about immigration? How should the terms be defined? What should we be discussing?
Well, I think right now, I'm in Arizona. I work with the Border Action Network, and mm-hmm. we're based in three communities that are right on the U.S.-Mexico border. So what we've seen, the shift in the debate and the shift in the terms of the debate has really focused on national security and border security in the last couple of years, and which on one hand it absolutely should, but for communities that live right on the border, what we're sacrificing at the same time, and I think that this could be extended throughout the rest of the country, we're forgetting about community security and what do we need in terms of policies that can uphold those very same values that created this country, that drive this country, and that everybody aspires to. And that needs to also be an integral part of the debate around national security as it's blurred in with immigration and border enforcement.
And Rosalinda, when you define this issue, how do you define it? What is this an issue of when we're talking about the border, when we're talking about illegal aliens, when we're talking about American laws? How do you define the issue?
I define that as really taking a look actually at America, at the United States, at ourselves as citizens in this country. Who are we and what kind of a place do we want to live? Because when we begin to define how we're going to treat immigrants and how we're going to deal with immigration, not just on a national, you know, in a global scale, but right in our own backyards, I think that we really need to broaden the discussion and think about what kind of a place do we want to live? You know, what do we want our place to be like? And I really think that George Bush's immigration perception and how to deal with it is a real problem for people in rural communities.
Well, let's talk about one of the things that we're hearing coming out of this administration and has indeed come out of Congress, a wall on the border between Mexico and America. Jennifer, how does the creation, the establishment, the erecting of a wall, how does that impact on the discussion that we're having, and what is your take on it?
Walls have been nothing but absolute Band-Aid. That what we've seen in the last 10 years, which is when the immigration began using walls as a strategy. They built walls in Texas and in California, and the effect that it's had is to just shift migration routes to different places. Right now, migration routes have concentrated in Arizona because there's less wall here. But it also means that it's the most dangerous, hot, isolated, treacherous terrain for people to enter the country. We had 282 bodies that were found in the Arizona desert last year alone. And that's because of the walls. It's because of the fact that migration is such a complex issue. The people and the reasons that people come to this country are so much more profound than any length of wall, any height of wall, any number of Border Patrol agents. People will keep coming because their loved ones are here, because there's jobs here, because there's a push from their own country and a pull factor from this country. The proposal for this new wall, one, it won't work, as we've already seen. History has told us this, both on the U.S.-Mexico border and then looking around the world at walls as a strategy. But then, you know, everyday person should also be concerned because every mile of wall is going to cost. You know, it's already been shown what it costs in the areas where they've been built. It's more than $1.3 million per mile for a strategy that will not work, but will, in fact, continue to kill people.
Rosalinda, you raised the observation above what we want the world to see. What do our policies say about us? The building of the wall, what does that say about us?
Well, you know, it really shows the world and also our communities how we are talking out of both sides of our mouth. On the one sense, we're sending soldiers to Iraq and other places all over the world. For years, we've been sending out this rhetoric of promoting freedom and democracy and, you know, touting our constitution and the way of life in the United States, when the reality is that when it comes down to people's backyards in the U.S., it's a much different story. And I think that, you know, while this is a huge problem for a lot of immigrant communities, I think the bigger problem is for Americans that have been here, you know, calling this country the United States for over 200 years. And I think it's a debate that needs to happen. I think that, you know, when we're talking about building walls in our communities, we're talking about building walls between families, between friends, between comrades, between business partners, between, you know, cultural connections that have been made for generations. Here in Washington State, we're bordering Canada. The Canadian border between the United States and Canada is a you know, the most peaceful border in the world. I believe they call it the longest peaceful border in the world. We've had this relationship with Canadians, you know, for forever. And the economy here in Whatcom County and many other counties along the Washington state border are very dependent on Canadian people coming in and out of, you know, the United States and vice versa. We, you know, visit Canada regular. Going to Vancouver, British Columbia here is just like going to Seattle. So when you're talking about building walls and having Minutemen come to our border and arm themselves and guard the border, it's a very offensive and disrespectful way to behave with our neighbors. And I think that that's what's happened with Mexico. It's a question of, you know, how do we treat your neighbors?
And Jennifer, George W. Bush, his policy, I'm not clear on exactly what his policy is. However, I do know that the policy, his immigration policy, has angered and upset his base of citizens. His base of constituents. Tell us about his policy and his immigration policy and how it would work or how it wouldn't work.
Well, from what we understand, because there hasn't really been much written and much detailed on Bush's proposal on immigration reform, and he's changed it, emphasized different parts of it.
And that's part of the problem with this whole discussion is there hasn't been anything written down. We have these people that are in entrenched camps, and there are so many levels to this discussion.
And there are a number of proposals right now that are sitting in the U.S. Senate and that will be taken up in debate that's being forecasted at late March. I think what Bush has emphasized is one piece, just one small piece of the larger need for comprehensive overhaul of both the immigration and border policies. He's emphasized a guest worker program, which would mean that people could apply from Mexico for jobs in the U.S. that a company has already established that nobody living within the U.S., no U.S. citizens or legal permanent residents are willing to take. If an employer can't find anyone here, then they could bring somebody from Mexico to do that job. That worker could be here for, I believe it was 2 years, and then they would be sent back. They would have no rights to stay here if they would like to get on that path towards legal permanent residency. The other concern is that, you know, I think unions are concerned about guest worker programs and have come out flatly, solidly against them because it maintains this whole second-class status of workers. This country would again be going back to a program that we had in the 50s that was riddled with corruption, riddled with exploitation, and further created these disposable workers. That is a country we design a policy to bring people in, work them down until we extract what we want from them, and then we just toss them back. And it separates families, it sort of degrades workers across the board, whether they're U.S. citizen workers or imported workers from other countries. It's not good for companies, it's not good for workers, and it's not good for the country overall. What we need are proposals that are rooted in the values that we think are important, which include giving people options, recognizing the basic human dignity of a person, and if they decide that they've got family here, people should be able to make those decisions if they want to go home or if they want to stay. Immigrants are an integral part of our economy. We need to treat them as such.
Rosalinda, do you see a difference in the treatment of Mexican immigrants than as opposed to, let's say, an immigrant coming from Ireland?
Definitely. And I think that's one of the biggest issues. You know, just let me say that I think that Bush's and policies, and also the Bush administration in general and many of our congressional delegates are looking at immigration reform from an enforcement perspective. And I think that the tension that we're seeing in the Republican Party is the other component of that perspective is the cheap labor, in the way that a lot of Bush's cronies need to make money. They need cheap labor. They need a way to get, you know, cheap workers into this country because American workers know better, you know. And so they're looking for a way to have their cake and eat it, too. And I think that that is the most horrible thing that can happen right now in our country. And unfortunately, the majority of the workers coming into the United States are Mexican workers. I believe it's over 60% of the immigrant workforce, if not higher, in the United States that work in services, in agriculture, and many construction are coming in from Mexico. And I think that this is another thing that is feeding the groups such as the Minutemen Project and other white supremacist movements in this country. They're being fueled by this high number of Mexican people working in the United States, and they're looking at this as an excuse to call it an invasion. And when you combine that kind of, you know, racist tendencies erupting in our country with the tension in the Republican Party on enforcement versus, you know, a cheap labor force, I think that what's happening in our communities in rural areas is a very divisive atmosphere that's building, and especially being directed at immigrants and then scapegoating being developed at the local levels in many of our rural counties. And I think that that is just a huge fire that's beginning to build in this country that we're very worried about.
And we need to take a quick break here, because when we come back, I would like to have a further discussion about the Minuteman Project. My guest this hour, Jennifer Allen, Executive Director of Border Action Network, joining us from Arizona, Rosalinda Guillen, Executive Director of Community-to-Community Development in Bellingham, Washington. I'm Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call you need to get to us. I will be back after this break. Stay with us.
To bloom, like a light bulb in a dark room. I'm just sitting here waiting for you to come on home and turn me on.
This is Esther Wright, General Manager of WGNU Radio. As you know, we are in the process of changing and starting new things at WGNU. To make the most of what you have to say and to air the best part everyone wants to hear, our engineers will ask you the subject you want to talk about as we start a new screening process at AM 920. We want to bring out the issues that matter most to you. Thank you for your cooperation.
Tired of talking to the wall, the TV, the puppy?
Here, Fido.
314-454-0400. 1-877-920-WGNU. Give us a call. We'll listen.
Radio is a very effective means of communication. Right now, thousands of people are hearing this message. Those same people could be hearing your message on WGNU right now. And each person who hears your ad is a potential customer. Is your business really strong enough that it can afford to pass up that many potential clients? To find out how affordable advertising on WGNU can help your business, call sales manager Brian Kay during regular business hours at 314-454-6660.
It's time now for Eye on the Loo. Redistricting, hand-picked school board members, up-and-coming elections, recalls, battles in Jefferson City, knockdown dragouts at the Board of Aldermen. Who is who and what is what? That's what you get every Thursday at 7 a.m. when Irene J. Smith joins Liz Brown on the wake-up call for an up-close personal examination of the comings and goings in the St. Louis region. That's Eye on the Loo, Thursday, 7 a.m. with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown. Did you miss the news? Did you forget to pick up a paper? Don't worry about it. Irene and Liz have their eye on it. Besides, those other guys, they didn't get it right anyway. That's Eye on the Loo with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown every Thursday at 7 a.m. only on the Wake Up Call.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Walking around like I'm out of time. I tripped and fell.
Brown, baby. This is Liz Brown. 454-0400 is my phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. Before we get back to our guest, a few business matters we need to tend to. This is a message to you from First Ward Alderman Charles Quincy Troop. There will be a meeting Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer located at 3300 North Kings Highway. This is a redevelopment meeting. You want to participate. You want to know what buildings are coming up, what buildings are going down, what development is taking place in your community. You need to be here Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway, completion of Kings Heights, the creation of the First Ward Education Youth Community and Culture Center, major developments around West Florissant and Union. Be there this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., United House of Prayer, 3300 North Kings Highway. An invitation from First Ward Alderman Charles Quincy Troop. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. I'm Liz Brown. This morning, in this last hour of today's show, we're having a discussion about immigration policies and immigration considerations, Minuteman Project, Border Patrol, illegal aliens, Americans, and all of the laws on this. Our guest this hour, Rosalinda Guillen, Executive Director of Community to Community Development, joining us from Bellingham, Washington. Also joining us from Arizona, Jennifer Allen, Executive Director of Border Action Networks. Ladies, welcome back. We were having a discussion, Rosalinda, about the Minuteman. You were easing up to a discussion about the Minuteman Project. Talk to us about what is the Minuteman Project.
The Minuteman Project is the latest incarnation of a border watch that was actually started many, many years ago, I believe in the 1920s, by, the, of all people, the Ku Klux Klan, watching the border along the U.S.-Mexico border. And lately, about 2002, a couple of California men, Chris Simcox and Jim Gilchrist, went to Arizona and began organizing a border watch, and they have since evolved into a project called the Minuteman Project, or a group, I guess you could say, a membership group. It's become a national group, and they have taken it upon themselves to monitor and to guard the Mexican-U.S. border. But more than that, they have expanded that border watch to the Canadian border. We're located about 30 miles from the Canadian border in Whatcom County on the northern west corner of the United States and Washington State. And even up here, the Minuteman Project has organized a group, and we immediately organized opposition to it. But you're seeing Minutemen popping up all over the country in states such as Arkansas, you know, Oregon.
Klan.
Yeah, all over.
Strong
and their target is Mexican immigrants.
And Jennifer, you're in Arizona. Let me talk to you about this. I'm looking at this is an amazing organization. And as a woman of African descent, I'm not distracted by what they stand for. But I'm looking at this on the net. There's an organization called Americans for Legal Immigration, and they're talking about how the Minutemen have volunteers helped an illegal entrant in distress late Friday. It was the first documented encounter between the volunteers and Mexican nationals sneaking across the borders. Words and attempts out here to humanize and legitimize the actions of the Minutemen. What's been your experience in Arizona with the Minutemen?
Well, I mean, the Minutemen have kind of rode on a wave that had already started before then. I mean, Arizona, unfortunately, has a history of vigilantism that dates back to the state's formation. We've had a number of other groups that have been out patrolling the border for years before Chris Simcox and Jim Gilchrist launched in and brought in some big PR firms to help them push this movement. We now have 4 civil lawsuits pending against vigilantes that have included groups pointing and chambering an AR-15 assault rifle, threatening to shoot and kill 2 11-year-olds and a 9-year-old, their father and grandfather, after insulting them and telling them that they're just like other ignorant, they're ignorant Mexican brothers. And there were some other words in there as well, but I won't say them on the air.
And you're drifting out a little bit. Can you stay on your phone a little bit better?
Sure.
Okay.
So there's a number, like I was saying, we have... There's 4 civil lawsuits pending against vigilante activities on the Arizona border. One of them was against a involving a vigilante who had pointed a loaded AR-15 assault rifle at two 11-year-olds and a 9-year-old, threatened to shoot and kill them, as well as their father and grandfather. We've got another man who was, that was against U.S. citizens, a Mexican-American family, out of Douglas.
So they looked at them and they said, illegal immigrant.
Yes.
We can do anything.
They're brown.
They're brown.
They're brown. I mean, they recognized the family was on a hunting trip. They knew that they weren't undocumented immigrants coming across the desert. Their pickup truck was just over the hill. But it's more of creating and utilizing this atmosphere of fear and intimidation. That's what the movement is really, its strength is in trying to scapegoat and create fear and further take a part of a community, take part of a country, and isolate them off in a corner and blame them for anything and everything that's going wrong in this country. I mean, the leadership of the Minuteman Project should be so ashamed of themselves for misguiding and misleading people down a path where, instead of trying to work for a country that raises the bar for everybody and that says that, you know what, our healthcare systems are failing, our schools do not get enough resources, our jobs, our wages are too low, and we're not being given health insurance and workers' rights, we should raise the bar for everybody. And you start where the bar is the lowest, and you work up from there. The Minutemen Project has the opposite mentality. Says, you know, I'm not getting my fair share, so let me pick the most vulnerable in this country and let me try to beat them up, isolate them, and scapegoat them for every ail in this country.
Let me get to a caller or two here. Christine, you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest, how does she feel in general about illegal immigrants? And I'd like to say in particular, I know that Cesar Chavez was all about legalizing the Mexican farm workers. Thank you.
Can we start with a definition of what is an illegal immigrant? And Rosalinda or Jennifer,
well,
jump in.
An illegal immigrant at this point is somebody who doesn't have the required documentation. You know, there's laws that require people to have certain documentation to be considered a citizen so that you can participate fully as a citizen in this country, like, vote, you know, you can vote. Now there's many social services tied to, you know, your citizenship. So an illegal immigrant is somebody who comes to this country without the required paperwork for crossing a border and being allowed to be in the country. I mean, and I'm just kind of like saying at the top of my head, you know, people that cross without the required documentation to be in this country.
And what are the numbers? Can either one of you give us the numbers of those as people that, as you have described them? What kind of impact numerically is that from Mexico to the United States?
Well, the number I keep hearing is somewhere between 10 and 12 million of, you know, supposedly undocumented immigrants.
Where does that number come from? How does one draw that conclusion? Do either one of you know that?
Do you want to take a shot at that?
You know, I think that some of the numbers that are used more frequently come from the Pew Center, which is a, you know, a number of different research institutions look at both census data and then they look at the number of workers in a community and sort of look at some of those gaps. If census, because census by and large doesn't include undocumented immigrants, but you can look at other factors. You can look at school enrollment, you can look at number of jobs existing in the community, whether reported or unreported. And I think that people look at other factors to try to fill in those missing pieces.
Let's say that number is accurate. Let's say that there are 12 million undocumented workers, people here in the United States from Mexico.
I see that number includes that's all countries.
That's
right?
All countries.
Those are Central Americans. Those are illegal undocumented Canadians. folks from Ireland.
How many Mexicans would there be in that number? Has anybody pulled those numbers out? Because it seems to me that it's dishonest in the debate to talk about undocumented workers when really people are talking about Mexican workers.
It's really talking about Mexican workers, and I think it's well over 80%. And you know, I mean, and I think it's a discussion that needs to be honest. And you know, when you're talking about illegal immigration and enforcement and the wall, you're talking about Mexican people. And I think that that's where people, you know, like myself, we get very serious about our citizenship in the United States and how we deal with other people from other countries. And then in the targeting, I think that's the worst part. That's the worst part what's happening in our country is the targeting and the scapegoating of one group of people.
Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. 454-0400 is the phone number. The email is revolution@lizbrown.com. This is Liz Brown, and I'm talking to Jennifer Allen, Executive Director of Border Action Network, joining us from Arizona, and Rosalinda Guillen, Executive Director of Community to Community Development in Bellingham, Washington. We're going to take a quick break here. Our number again is 1-877-920-WGNU. And before we do take the break, I do want to let everybody know that there is a message, there is a meeting Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the United House of Prayer at 3300 North Kings Highway. Alderman Charles Quincy Troop wants to invite First Ward residents to this redevelopment meeting. There will be a discussion of the First Ward Education, Youth, Community, and Culture Center, major developments occurring for West Florissant Union and surrounding areas, and the completion of the Kings Height program. Stand up, be a part of the redevelopment efforts and actions going on in the First Ward this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at 3300 North Kings Highway, United House of Prayer. We're taking a break.
And of all the fancy satin and silk, my white cotton feels so good. Search high and low for a place where I can lay my burdens down. Ain't nothing in the whole wide world like the peace that I have found. The joy that
this is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Jerusalem. Israel has announced it's cutting off its monthly tax payments to the Palestinian Authority. This is in response to the election victory by the Hamas group last week. The money is in the form of customs revenue collected by Israel and is the major portion of funding for the Palestinian Authority to operate and pay its 140,000 civil employees. The U.S. and the European Union are already pressuring the Palestinians to reject violence and recognize Israel, or run the risk of having more money cut out from them. The Israeli payment of $55 million was due yesterday, but it's being withheld. And a spokesman for the foreign ministry says future payments are being suspended pending a review by acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. The economy minister for the Palestinian Authority calls Israel's actions illegal and says it's now going to turn to the Arab world for monetary assistance. And Dateline Washington. The Pentagon is proposing to create the WMD police. Specifically, military brass are considering a strategy proposal that will create a new unit whose mission will be to prevent the transfer of weapons of mass destruction from so-called rogue nations to terrorist groups. It would involve several hundred troops, some of which will be made up of special ops and intelligence. Although the Pentagon is refusing comment about this special unit, it has confirmed that some 8,000 new troops are going to be added to its special operations forces in the coming year to step up the fight against terrorism. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update.
This is Esther Wright, General Manager of WGNU Radio. As you know, we are in the process of changing and starting new things at WGNU. To make the most of what you have to say and to air the best part everyone wants to hear, our engineers will ask you the subject you want to talk about as we start a new screening process at AM 920. We want to bring out the issues that matter most to you. Thank you for your cooperation.
Want to do something sweet for your sweetie?
Want to show the world that he or she is loved? Want to be on the radio? Why not let everyone know that you love your baby with an on-air I love you message on Valentine's Day? On Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, we'll play your I love you message. And if you're a little shy, that's okay. Liz can do it for you. So if you need to let him or her know you care on Valentine's Day, call 367-2743. That's 367-2743. And say, I love you on Valentine's Day, right here on the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else indeed are you going to find washers, dryers, DVD, big screen television, treadmills, the finest tools in this country? Sears, of course, and the only Sears located in the city of St. Louis. You do not have to spend $750 billion trillion to fill your tank up to get to the mall. Why? Because this Sears here in the city of St. Louis has everything that the mall has, plus customer service. You can't beat it. You need to get down to 3425 Union. Sears, black owned and black operated, right there in your neighborhood. Sears, get your shop on. Talk to Jerome Williams. And you know what? Tell him I told you to, Sears.
Hey, WGNU listeners, this is Keith Gray of Higher Ground. I'm moving from the 1 to 2 p.m. slot to the 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. Monday through Friday slot on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. I will talk to you then.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
And strong, it does not know defeat. I feel it proud and know the sound of truth. In every soul, there is a memory, a standing tall, the proudest we could be. I cannot.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My guest this hour are Jennifer Allen. She's the Executive Director of Border Action Network, joining us from Arizona. Rosalinda Guillen, Executive Director of Community to Community Development from Bellingham, Washington. And Rosalinda, I'd like to start with you as we end this hour. George W. Bush wants to instate, although he hasn't been talking about it lately, a guest worker status. And you talked a little bit about that earlier in the hour. How is that being, how would you judge the climate for that, the acceptance for that, or the openness to that, the whole guest worker program? Okay, we can't, for some reason, we can't get our guests on. So, this is Liz Brown on the Wake Up Call. 454-0400 is our phone number. 454-6609 is our fax. Our toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. While we try to get our guests back here, I want to remind everybody that you can get to the information about the guests that appear on the Wake Up Call
every day. You can do this by going to LizBrown.com. That's LizzBrown.com. And check out the guests for this week. Check out the guests we had last week. And also additional information on those shows that we have done here on the Wake Up Call. You can also stop at the corner store there, do a little shopping, check out the site. Get on over to LizBrown.com. And I do want to remind everybody, of course, that we are streamed at WGNU.net. Also, iPodded at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, we are also, every day, we are archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. To me, as we talk about this immigration issue, I think that as many discussions do in this country, it brings up issues that citizens are not always able or willing to have a discussion on. And I think we have our other guest back here, Rosalinda. Rosalinda, welcome back.
Thank you.
Technical difficulties there. We were talking about the issue of guest worker status and what George Bush wants to do. How is that playing out there? How is that landing with citizens out there? The guest worker proposal?
In our area and in Washington State, it's not landing well at all. In Washington State, for the last couple of years, there's been a company called Global Horizons that has attempted to bring in guest workers, and they in fact brought in several hundred workers from Thailand to pick apples. And it turned out to be a disaster both for the Thai workers, for the local communities, and for Global Horizons. There's been quite a strong movement in Washington State to block Global Horizons from bringing any more guest workers, and they, in fact, have been blocked up to this point. But the fact is that there are many farm workers in Washington State that are skilled apple workers as well as many other agricultural workers. And I think the feeling here in Washington State, which is still pretty much small to medium-sized, you know, agricultural operations, is that the workers to do the work are here. They're professionals. They're experienced in agriculture. They've been here for many years. And so, you know, a lot of them don't have the required documentation. People know that. They're trying to handle that issue. So the whole guest worker proposal just doesn't go over well. And for Latinos in general, whether they're farm workers or not, the Bracero program, which is the earlier form of, you know, basically we see as indentured servitude for Mexican workers that started during the Second World War, is just a horrible memory that we want to wipe out. We're totally opposed to guest workers, and especially in the manner that they're, you know, people want to bring them in. In agriculture, it would be a disaster, frankly.
And so what is the solution? We have 4 minutes left here. What is the solution to this challenge of immigration?
Rosa? Well, for me, I think that the solution is really for our leadership, both in Washington, D.C. and all across the country at all levels, to be engaging in community dialogue about, you know, what each region needs. I don't think that there's one blanket solution to immigration. There never has been.
Is it part of the honest debate about this that there are too many undocumented workers in Mexican workers in the United States? Is that part of an honest dialogue?
That's a big part of it, because I think that debate, these are people that are making the United States their home now, that have children in schools, that, you know, have been living in these communities, and that's got to be first and foremost the number one priority that's got to be dealt with. If we can't even deal with that, then good Lord, you know, how are we going to deal with the bigger picture of, you know, the future of immigrants coming into this country? The other big debate, I think, is our relationship with Canada and Mexico, and how we as a country are dealing with that relationship. And it's really about working across borders in ensuring a stable economies in all these countries together. Kind of like the Marshall Plan that we dealt with in, you know, with Europe after World War II. How do we work together, you know, to stabilize all of our economies, especially in the rural areas, to try to have, you know, immigration that is really necessary immigration that's dealt with in a sensible manner, you know, at the higher level and then at the local level. So I think that kind of economic discussion needs to happen desperately.
Don't you think also that there has to be an honest discussion about the issue of race and color? Because I live here in the city of St. Louis. We have a huge Bosnian population, and a Bosnian population that was pursued and brought to the city of St. Louis. And I think it would be fair to say that the city of St. Louis has bent over backwards in an effort to help the Bosnian community get jobs, to get housing, to get health care, to get benefits, to get a whole lot of things. And there has been a we-can-do-it American attitude towards the assimilation of Bosnian people into our schools and the culture here in the city of St. Louis. That's not happening with the Mexican community. And race is the reason for that, isn't it, Rosalinda?
It's a huge reason. I think that the United States has never finished dealing. They've never dealt with race in this country. And now, with the immigration debate, is bringing it out in the most ugly manner. Mm-hmm. We have the same thing here. We have Ukrainian and Estonian immigrants that have brought, you know, were welcomed in Whatcom County. They automatically receive citizenship after 7 years, no questions asked.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody has said anything at all. Like you said, it's the same attitude that you're describing. But yet, you talk about Mexican immigrants, and it's a huge issue. And people do not want to admit that there is a race issue in this immigration, debate. And that has been the biggest problem for us here in dealing with the Minuteman Project.
I want to thank you very much, Rosalinda Guillen, Executive Director of Community-to-Community Development. Where can people find out more about your organization?
They can go to our website, www.foodjustice.org.
Very good. Rosalinda, thank you so much. And
thank
I love
you.
That name, Rosalinda. I've always loved that name.
Thank you very much for having me. Bye
Take
now.
Care. Listen, folks, Liz Brown, the wake-up call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Tomorrow is... Is it Friday already? Wow. This week has just flown by. Don't forget, if you want to do something sweet for your sweetie, why don't you give a I love you shout out on the wake up call? You want to put that on the radio, tell your baby that you love him on the wake up call? You can do that. Give us a call at 367-2743, 367-2743, and be a star on the radio and get great brownie points, too. I'm Liz Brown. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay with us.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air,
that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU.
I'm Daria Aldinger. This has been a rough 24 hours for U.S. troops in Iraq. 5 more are dead. Meanwhile, a U.S. airstrike has some Iraqis furious. A woman was killed in a Shiite section of Baghdad. More from ABC's David Wright in Baghdad.
Although small roads